that you're never alone. Well, maybe there's something, there's one thing you shouldn't have said. So you better beware. And you better get light in your head. And you better get peace in your bed. If you wanna get, if you wanna get high, watch the movie go blistering by. Just look at the sadness, I wish I could cry. Well, maybe there's something, there's one thing that I should have said. Well, it better be said.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 24th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. And if you're listening over, if you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Access code 449389#. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions, plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off. We was reading, I think we ended chapter 19 in the Gospel of John, the crucifixion, and we're going to pick up after the crucifixion. Gospel of John, chapter 20, we'll be reading from verses 1 through 18, the resurrection. The first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene, early, when it was yet dark, unto the sepulchre, and seeth the stone taken away from the sepulchre. Then she runneth, and cometh to Simon Peter, and to the other disciples whom Jesus loved, and saith unto them, They have taken away our Lord out of the sepulchre, and we know not where they have laid him. Peter therefore went forth, and that other disciple, and came to the sepulchre. So they ran both together, and the other disciple did outrun Peter, and came first to the sepulchre. And he, stooping down and looking in, saw the linen cloths laying, and went not in. Then cometh Simon Peter, following him, and went into the sepulchre, and seeth the linen cloths lie, and the napkin that was about his head, not lying with the linen cloth, but wrapped together in place by itself. Then went in also that other disciple, which came first to the sepulchre, and he saw and believed. For as yet they knew not the scripture, that he must rise again from the dead. Then the disciples went away again into their own homes. But Mary stood without at the sepulchre, weeping, and as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre, and seeth two angels in white sitting, the one on the head and the other on the feet, where the body of Jesus had laid. And they said unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? She saith unto them, Because they have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. And when she had thus said, she turned herself back and looked and saw Jesus standing, and knew not that it was Jesus. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? Whom seekest thou? She, supposing him to be the gardener, saith unto him, Sir, if you have borne him hence, tell me where thou hast laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus saith unto her, Mary. She turned herself, and saith unto him, Rabboni, which is to say, Master. Jesus saith unto her, Touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren, and say unto them, I ascend unto my Father, and your Father, and to my God, and your God. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples she had seen the Lord, and that she had spoken these things unto her. That was the Gospel of John, chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. Okay, tonight we're going to look at the introduction to our consent of government course, actually it's also the preface to the book that I'm writing. I'm thinking the book's probably going to be called Liberty Lost, and of course inside the book is hopefully Liberty Found. But I do want to read part of this book, so tonight I'm going to read the preface, and we'll pick it up from there. Hopefully we'll get some good discussions. Also, just a note, I know we spoke of this once before about the music that we play. I usually try to pick a good song that has some good lyrics and has a purpose for what we're doing. So it's not just the fact that I might like this music, but I play it for a purpose. It has everything to do with what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. So there's some good lyrics if people want to follow along with that when we get these songs going. We do give on the Monday night, on the Monday or the weekly newsletter, which I believe goes out Monday morning. Usually Jan puts in the link to the lyrics if people want to follow along. Okay, anyway, we're going to look and we're going to read the preface. There's no way, we don't have a copy of this up online, although it is in the course. If people want to try to go back and follow along in that. But other than that, we're going to be reading it. Preface, Part 1. In America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. If the righteous many do not confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph. President Trump. We, the people, have lost our way. Liberty's candle has waxed cold. The minions have woven a web of deceit. And the demagogues promise us liberty, while they themselves are the servants of corruption. Our servants have become our masters. They have cast their spell upon us, transforming the American dream into the New World Order nightmare. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Thomas Jefferson. This is more than a book. It's a plan, a roadmap from slavery to liberty. The purpose of this book and its supporting website, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, is to provoke we the people to action and arm them and with education suitable and necessary for survival. Then we the people can tie down our government with the chains of the Constitution and bring them back under our consent. National Liberty Alliance is the only organization with a viable plan to return our servant government back under the Constitution and restore our republic. At the time of writing this book, President Trump, working with military intelligence, was dismantling the deep state and revealing the truth of all their worldwide evil and chaos to the sleeping populace, thus causing a huge power vacuum that the people must fill. It is up to the people to take back and secure the republic as our elected representatives cannot. This requires arming yourself with the knowledge of our founding documents and the nature's God. This is your wake-up call to arms. Only when we, the people, rise up to stand against tyrants in our government will we be able to return to our former status under common law. In order to accomplish this, all of us must be first educated in the law of the land. This is the challenge that must be met if we are to save our republic. Educate and inform the whole mass of people. They are the only surable reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Thomas Jefferson. I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional powers. Thomas Jefferson. Power and authority. There is a war that has been raging since antiquity. It is a war for our hearts and our minds, for our flesh, for our very souls, to bring all mankind under a one world order. As George Washington put it, orchestrated by a small group of cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men who have subverted the power of the people and usurped up for themselves the reign of government. They have put in the place of the delegated will of the nation, the will of a small but artful and enterprising minority, to make the public administration the mirror of their ill-concerted and incongruous projects of factions, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. There are only two fundamental traditions of law and government that are active among humanity, each manifesting contrary ideals: the common law, also known as natural law, and the civil law. The natural law rests upon justice administrated by scriptural principles that presuppose the God against the inherent imperfections of human reason. The civil law, on the other hand, justifies its methods by presupposing and appealing to man's notion of perfected reason. The common law tradition governs only a handful of countries and is fundamentally consonant with scriptures. Acknowledged acknowledging the divine eternity of law as the measure of all things. The civil law tradition, on the other hand, governs most modern nations and is fundamentally Babylonian, trusting human reason as the worthy measure of all things. The natural law tradition recognizes the necessity of human administration of law and government while providing safeguards against man's weaknesses. Legislative laws of men change with the times, serve agendas, serve governments, demoralize men, and are incapable of mercy. Whereas God's law are the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. They serve God, serve man, benefit both victim and wrongdoer, provide for repentance, considers mercy, builds morals, and saves souls. Whereas legislative laws serve the status quo and can never be just. In 1776, we the people ordained the Declaration of Independence, where we covenanted with God. Thereby, we founded ourselves under the laws of nature's God, whereby he gifted us with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Common law provides that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to replace the guard, present representatives and administrators, and restore the law of the land, thereby securing our safety and happiness. The 41st Congress, unbeknown by the majority, defrauded the people by the passing of the Organic Act of 1871 that created a state within a state within a city, transferring the control of Washington, D.C. to the deep state. Future Congresses, under the direction of the minions of the New World Order, also known as the Bar, continued to build acts and alter statutes upon the fraud. This transformed the unalienable rights to civil rights, our republic to a democracy, the United States to a corporation, and the laws of nature's God to civil and criminal law, which have their roots in Babylon. This placed the United States under fiction of law, and as long as the people believe the fiction to be law, it is. These acts of Congress were without authority, and therefore all these unconstitutional statutes are null and void. And until the people understand and believe this, we cannot restore the republic. Perception changes everything, for reality is as one believes, and the tyrants know it. Said act attempted to supplant our republican form of government that our servants were entrusted to guarantee. This criminally created a foreign venue, proceeding under fiction of law. Any court resting upon said act is a de facto court. Any judge acting under such fiction of law denies due process and is acting in excess of their judicial authority in collusion under the color of law, thereby losing judicial immunity. Therefore, any judicial reliance upon said act is injudicious. In common law, the general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, thought having the form and the name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since it unconstitutionally dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as it had ever been, as it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone. It affords no protection and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute run counter to the fundamental laws of the land, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. We, the sovereign people, ordained and established a federal government to serve the following six directives. Number one, form a more perfect union. Create a federal city. Establish uniform naturalization rules. Coin money, establish post offices, post roads, and legislate counterfeiting and privacy laws. 2. Establish justice. Create courts, secure habeas corpus. Congress may not impose an income or direct tax forbidden by the bar attorney from holding office and prevents misconstruction or abuse of powers. 3. Ensure domestic tranquility. Provide for the militia for the suppression of insurrection and repel invasions. 4. Provide for the common defense. Raise and support armies. Maintain a navy. Make rules of the land and naval forces. 5. Promote the general welfare. Promote the arts, the sciences. Make commerce regular. No taxes or duties on exports. 6. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Guarantee a Republican government, protect against the invasion, and enforce the laws of the land. Our Constitution provided for a government that united the states as one unique nation, where no state is deprived of its equal suffrage of the Senate. But insidious fractions within all three branches of our government have conspired over time and have succeeded in depriving every state its equal suffrage. This destroyed all balances of power between the states and the federal government. Through the fraudulent passing of a law of the repugnant 17th Amendment, a law specifically and explicitly forbidden by the Constitution itself. In Amendment 10, the people established that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor forbidden by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. All legislation by Congress that was not delegated to them is null and void, and it is the duty of this Congress to read and understand our Constitution and start obeying it, because clearly they are not. And in the day of reckoning, ignorance of the law will not save them. The foundation of our Constitution is the Declaration of Independence, which states, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our unalienable rights, such as life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and government by consent of the government of the governed, it is the right of the people to remove from office by indictment or recall any elected, appointed, or hired servant who refuses to obey the law of the land. We, the people, have suffered a long train of abuses and usurpations by our government that perpetually persuaded the same objective, which revealed a design to reduce the people to living under absolute despotism. It is therefore our right and our duty to indict such tyrants and try them for treason in a court of justice. These tyrants have infiltrated our government from the very inception of our nation, and have labored continually, deteriorating our union, taking the controls of every level of government. They have changed our federal city, built upon righteousness and governed by our Creator's law, which is natural law, into a corporate state of greed and corruption, controlled by foreign bankers and bar attorneys. They have brought us to the very brink of war. Tyrants in Congress have ignored and expunged the people's 6 directives. 1, instead of forming a more perfect union, they have given our federal city, post offices, and coining of money to foreign bankers and bar attorneys. 2, instead of establishing justice, they have unlawfully turned our courts of jurisdictions unknown, abolished habeas corpus, imposed an income tax that has destroyed the middle class, and turned all lawmaking over to the bar who have abrogated the law of the land. 3, instead of ensuring domestic tranquility, they have abolished the militia and closed our armories. 4. Instead of providing for the common defense, they have kept our armed forces in a state of perpetual war. 5. Instead of promoting the general welfare, they have regulated commerce, and instead of making commerce regular, they imposed unconstitutional sin taxes. Advancements in science, health, and technology have been hidden. Inventors have been stifled and murdered. 6. Instead of securing blessings of liberty, they have changed a republic first into a democracy and then into an oligarchy. There is a hidden hand that has orchestrated events, controls our courts, and dictates subversive legislation through the insidious bar. America is in shambles, and our elected servants walk as blind men. These tyrants within have denied us due process. They have abrogated the common law. They have created federal debtors' prisons, the IRS. They have robbed our homes through nonjudicial foreclosures. They have stolen our children in family courts. They have stolen our parents in the estates and in probate courts. They have tainted every grand jury trial and trial jury and have created free speech zones. They have labeled patriots terrorists. They have destroyed our political process. They have stolen our free press. They have infringed upon our right to defend ourselves, and they have destroyed our manufacturing base. They have chased 80% of the top Fortune 500 companies out of America. They have destroyed our economy. They have turned our dollar into debt. They have robbed our silver and our gold. They have demoralized our children. They have opened our borders. They have used a BLM to terrorize American ranchers, miners, and loggers in order to sell off America's resources to foreign countries. They have stole our postal system to foreign corporations. They have broken our electric company sales to foreign corporations. They have spied on we the people, intercepting and storing all our communications in case we become persons of interest. Our servants are taking bribes from special interest groups, thereby selling their vote and their soul to the highest bidder, usually on legislation that they don't even have the constitutional authority to pass in the first place, and placing the will of the corporate world above the will of the people. Acts of our servants are not to provide this for special interest groups, not to divide us, not to establish statutory courts in jurisdictions unknown, not to establish laws that enslave the human spirit, not to keep us in a perpetual law, not to demoralize us, not to destroy our posterity, not to put us in harm's way, not to rob us of the proper education, and not to lead us as lambs to the slaughter. The covenant made between God and his people in 1776 empowered we the people to self-government. George Washington said the United States was built upon the fundamental maxims of true liberty, and at the basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government. But the Constitution, which at any time exists till changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is sadly obligatory upon all. And very idea of the power and the right of the people to establish government presupposes the duty of every individual to obey the established government. By God were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible. Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And through him, natural law, we the people are vested with the unalienable rights to govern, and governments are not. Our government servants' power and authority is defined in the Constitution that we the people ordained and established. Thus, the purpose of this book is to convey to the people, to be cognizant that we the people did not consent to any legislative powers that legislated our behavior or penalized wrongdoers. Common law decrees that in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And it is we the people, through an untainted grand jury, who are to decide if whether there is evidence to indict. It is we the people, through an untainted trial jury, who are to decide both the law and the facts. It is we, the people, through an untainted trial jury, who are to decide guilt or innocence. It is we, the people, through an untainted trial jury, who are to decide the restitution and penalty. Common law decrees that for every injury there must be a remedy. Restitution is the remedy that has the power to restore both victim and wrongdoer. To be cognizant that we the people have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of persons. We the people have been entrusted to dispose justice through juries formed by the people ourselves. We need not serve in government's permission. Does the master seek a leave from his servant? Let us remind our servants that the first known recorded grand jury that was formed by the people themselves to put the tyrant king back under the control of the law was written by we the people, who wrote their intentions and commands down on paper entitled the Magna Carta. to be cognizant that we, the people, have the unbridled right by the law and in the law to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of information, indictments, and presentments to the courts of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding under natural law. Our founding fathers, with foresight, grafted into the common law, the Fifth Amendment, a buffer that we the people may rely upon for justice when public office officials, including judges, go rogue, act in bad behavior, and criminally violate the law. To be cognizant that the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is the constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institution of government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident both in the scope of its power to investigate criminal wrongdoing and in the manner to which the power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants insurance that it is not. United States versus John Williams. To be cognizant that bar-controlled federal and state court judges, by their presumed authority, contrary to their oath and duty, fraudulently claim the Constitution for the United States and its capstone Bill of Rights is abolished by statutes written by traitorous bar members and passed by traitorous legislators, which are acts of conspiracy, treason, and war against the United States of America and thereby we the people. To be cognizant that the United States Supreme Court confirmed unconstitutional legislation null and void. To be cognizant that, because rights are unalienable, legislators cannot legislate or abolish rights away, no matter what the bar has instructed. Rights come from God and not man. Therefore, not even we the people can give them up for ourselves or others. Once we the people ordained common law as the law of the land, no man can abrogate it. To claim to do so is an act of war against the people and their God. To be cognizant that unconstitutional acts are not law, and no one is bound to obey them. Judges are expected to maintain a high standard of judicial performance, and when they violate the Constitution, they cease to represent the government. They become liable for damages and lose any immunity they may have had. State judges, as well as federal, have the responsibility to respect and protect persons from violations of constitutional rights. To be cognizant that, the United States Supreme Court said, decency, security, and liberty alike demand that government officials be subjected to the same rules of conduct that are the commands to the citizens. In a government of laws, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Crime is contagious. If government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. And against that perilous doctrine, this court should resolutely set its face. Judges have no more right to decline the exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to usurp that which is not given. The one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. No judicial process whatsoever, form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside of the limits of the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued, and an attempt to enforce it beyond these boundaries is nothing less than lawless violence. To be cognizant that the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is comprised of 50 Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries, each unified among the counties within their respective states, that were overwhelmingly unified by the constituting common law grand juries in all 3,130 United States counties. All 50 states have unified nationally in an assembly of thousands of people in the name of we the people to suppress, through our courts of justice, enemies both foreign and domestic, within our governments. This unified grand jury will remain in session until we secure the nation from the tyrants at large and reinstate our Constitution. To be cognizant that the first recorded grand jury in 1215 AD declared, if anyone has been dispossessed without the legal judgment of his peers from his lands, homes, franchises, or from his rights, we will immediately restore them to him. And if a dispute arises over this, then it will be decided by the 25 jurors by whom mentioned is made below in the clauses for securing the peace. Moreover, for all those possessions from which anyone has, without the lawful judgment of his peers, been deceased or removed by our government, we will immediately grant full justice therein. Magna Carta, paragraph 52. To be cognizant that we the people via the grand jury commanded via writ quo warranto and writ mandamus, all elected, appointed, and hired servants to obey the law of the land and join the people in our quest to reinstate the Constitution for the United States of America and bring to justice all subverts. To be cognizant that natural law is written in the hearts of men. It's a process of maxims and common sense, and is very easy to see and grasp by the common person, whereas bar attorneys, who are trained in civil law, founded upon Babylonian law, use statutes to construct statutory prisons to control the masses via fines and incarcerations, which have no part in the common law. Benjamin Franklin, after voting on the Constitution, was asked, "What kind of government do we have?" "A republic, if you can keep it," he replied. That statement by Franklin covers an array of concepts, chief among them morality, social maturity, and a desire to self-educate ourselves and our posterity in natural law, also known as common law, without which we will remain slaves to the tyrants who will relentlessly seek power and control over our lives. To be cognizant that the experience of common people who look into those things will find rest and perceive these things to be self-evident. But bar tort attorneys will, with very few exceptions, having been taught the art of hypocrisy and seeking lies, have had their consciousness seared, as it were, with a hot iron, and thereby are unable to see these things. After all, they invested years of time and much money to receive the lie that they think is the truth, with a Juris Doctorate to prove it, as they hold in disdain anyone self-taught who dare to challenge their web of deceit. To be cognizant that the Lord warned us that lawyers reject the counsel of God, and they place upon men burdens grievous to be endured while they place themselves above the burdens. By controlling our courts, while they are never held accountable, even to their own laws. The Lord went on to say that they take away the key of the knowledge, thereby preventing many from entering into the kingdom of truth. The only solution, as I mentioned above, this is more than a book, it's a plan, a roadmap from slavery to liberty, and it must start with the reader's serious desire to self-educate themselves and their children in natural law. This will cultivate within the people a moral compass and nurture the social maturity necessary to develop and sustain a true people's republic. George Washington called the American political ideal the Great Experiment. Contemporary English historian Paul Johnson writes, "The creation of the United States is the greatest of all human adventures." And Thomas Jefferson warns us that an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education is provided for its citizenry. For the great experiment to be successful, the whole mass of people must be educated and informed. The preservation of our liberty depends upon this. Only we, the people, can correct the abuses of constitutional powers. The ultimate powers of society must rest onto the people themselves. Our founding fathers did not leave their posterity without the ability to self-govern via our consent, and this is what this book will endeavor to accomplish by revealing what has been hidden in plain sight. It starts with an understanding of the law and equity and the difference between them, with natural law and positive law and the difference between them, with natural rights and civil rights and the difference between them, with a republic and a democracy and the difference between them. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Declaration of Independence. We, the people, ordained and established the law that governs our servants via the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America, and the Bill of Rights. This book will instruct the people how to consent to the actions of our servant government by tying them down with the chains of the Constitution, by controlling and participating in the following judicial and political processes. The grand jury. We, the people, must administrate and orientate the grand jury and not the prosecutor, who will deny the people access to the grand jury and stack the grand jury in his favor, using statutes to get his indictments. The grand jury must understand two things. First, in order for there to be a crime, there must first be an injured party. And second, the grand jury can nullify any statute, because we, the people, never gave our legislators the authority to legislate our behavior or dictate punishments for wrongdoers or define a crime. Furthermore, if Congress does not discipline their peers and the officers they approved, the grand jury can indict them if they violate their oaths, thereby removing them from office. Why are we ignorant of the facts that we, the people, through the grand jury, have the ability to indict any elected servant, thereby removing them from office, if they refuse to honor their oaths? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and common law. Petit jury. The trial jury has the power to nullify statutes, and if the judge tries to interpret the law, that would be jury tampering. The petit jury decides both the facts and the law. They also decide the punishment with an eye towards restitution, using the biblical principle that if a man steals an ox or a sheep, he shall restore four or five times. We, the people, consent to the innocent or the guilt of the accused. In all criminal cases, no judge can judge one of the people. Only the people, through an untainted petit jury, can judge the people. So why are there so many people serving jail sentences without ever being tried by a jury? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and its common law. Committeemen. We need to restore the elected committeemen, whereas committeemen at the grassroots level decide who gets on the ballot and not the party bosses. Committeemen can require candidates to take a course on the Constitution and civics before putting them on the ballot. Committeemen can recall any elected official from office for not honoring their oath, or if they refuse to speak when they have a duty to answer. Only we, the people, can nominate candidates for public office through the committeemen process. So why are there so many constitutionally ignorant people and criminals elected to office without ever being nominated by the people? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and the common law. The ballot box. Vote. Education. Knowledge is power. No one understands our founding documents. No one understands common law and where it comes from. No one understands the history of common law. No one understands our founding fathers. No one understands American history. No one understands the court system. No one understands our legislators' powers. We, the people, never consented to the licensing of our rights and the controlling of our behaviors through legislation. So why have our servant legislators written thousands of statutes controlling us as if we were their servants? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and the common law. Why is it that our elected servants receive bribes from special interest groups to do the will and not the will of we, the people, who elected them? The answer is because we are ignorant to our founding documents and the common law. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to abolish or to alter or abolish it. Declaration of Independence. Why do we, the people, have government that suppresses and terrorizes we, the people? The answer is because we are ignorant of our founding documents and the common law. We believe a study of the contents of this book will be of lasting value to all who have serious concerns on
John, you're off the air, John.
Am I back?
Yep, you just got back.
Okay. All right, well, that was the last paragraph. I'll just reread the last paragraph. Why do we have government that suppresses and terrorizes we, the people? The answer is because we're ignorant of our founding documents and the common law. We believe that a study on the contents of this book will be of lasting value to all who have serious concerns on the direction this nation, and that the exercising of the principles within this book can return America back to its roots again. Okay, that was the preface to the book that I'm writing. It is also an introduction. It's an introduction also to our government by consent course, and it's the focus of what this book is all about. These are the things that everyone must know. If you want liberty, you must know it. If you don't know it, you know, and you're ignorant, then if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. So it's the knowledge of law. It's the knowledge of our American heritage, where we come from, the history, the founders, where common law comes from, and how that was established. And how it has been established in our nation also. It is the basis for the Declaration of Independence. Without the common law, there is no Declaration of Independence. Without unalienable rights, or shall I reverse it the other way, without God, there are no unalienable rights. You either receive your rights from your maker, or you receive your rights from some bureaucrat. And it's that simple. And, of course, this is the way and the direction our nation has taken over the past 50-plus years. Actually, this has been going on since the inception of our country. This actually, the date of beginning of destruction began on July 4th, 1776. And they used that date, and they're referring to themselves and not to our Declaration of Independence. So, again, I hope everybody takes this to heart and gets involved in the study that we have going, Consent of Government. When the book comes out, I'm kind of hoping the book will be out sometime in maybe fall, winter. I'm not sure. Of course, the course will be done before that, and the book will be in process. There'll be some things in the book that's not in the course, not much, though. And a lot of the forms and things we're putting together that I thought about putting into the book that people should know, we're probably going to put it on a website and put a link to it in the book where people can find the different necessary forms that they might need in order to open a court of record, challenge jurisdiction, write a habeas corpus, and many, many, many other things. Everybody should have the knowledge. We, at some point in time, we need to get our campaign going into the schools. We need to get our children educated in the very same things we're learning. They can learn these things too. You know, if we treat our children and teach them how to think instead of what to think, they can accomplish the goals far better than we can. You know, they'd be at the beginning as long as we put in the right information and feed them the history and the knowledge of these things. They will build upon them themselves. They will grow upon them. And that's when our nation will finally be strong, when our children have an understanding of these things. But we have to have an understanding of these things in order to save the nation. We cannot save this nation without it. That's why, you know, I say, you know, every time we open the program up, and we talk about these things, we make the mention of the fact that our purpose is to really save the nation. Let's see how I put it here. Hang on a second. It's not jumping out at me very quickly on this paper, but in any event, what we are doing here is what's going to take to save the nation. Trump is doing a great job. He's trying to return back to the people the power and the authority that they have and should have. The question is, can they handle it? Can they accept it? Can they exercise these things? And obviously, ignorance cannot exercise these things. And that's why I'm constantly harping on this point, that people need to get educated. They need to take these courses. And again, you know, when the book comes out, I'll tell you what. You know, if you're in jail today, you know, 10 years ago was different, but especially in federal prisons, if you're in jail today, you don't have access to the computer that you can get out there and start looking up these things on United States Supreme Court rulings and looking into the history and studying the law from the perspective of natural law to try to defend yourself. You're stuck. And unless you have this knowledge already in you, written within you, then you're going to have to rely on a lawyer, which will never get you out or never get you a fair trade deal there. So you're going to be stuck. But they don't restrict books, okay? And the two books people should have if they're in prison, you should get these books to anyone you know that's in prison. One, of course, is the Bible, and the other one would be the book that's in writing and should be, like I said, ready later by the end of this year. You know, the information in this book is also written in such a way, and the contents and the index and everything that's going to be laid out inside this book, which will give people quick access to questions or thoughts or ideas that they're looking for, and information that they can use in writing their papers, how to have a habeas corpus, for instance. So some forms I definitely will put into the book. A habeas corpus will be one that will definitely be in the book, and also you know, challenging jurisdiction will definitely be in the book. And again, it'll be a handbook to people going into court and defending themselves. Forget the man on the land stuff. Forget going in and then making changes and getting rid of your Social Security number and doing all these things that I've come to realize is really crazy. It's an exercise forget about it. It's just worthless. But you know, and I did these things. I speak to myself first. I've done all these things because I was conned into believing those things. You know, I thought you'd say the magic words, click your heels, and you're out of that court and into your own court. It's not going to happen. They laugh at you. And they take advantage of the fact that because they realize you're ignorant to what really goes on. You know, you may understand the con job that they're playing, but there's no way you can defend against it. You have to deal with it as a fraud. That's what it is. Call it for what it is, a fraud. They don't have the power. They don't have the authority. They don't have the they don't have the jurisdiction over you. We're not subject to the United States, as they say. No, the United States is subject to us. We are not subject to the United States. We wrote the Constitution. We ordained and established the Constitution. Therefore, we're the kings, so to speak. And so they are under the Constitution. We are above the Constitution. All their powers and authorities on the federal level to write law was written in Article 1, Section 8. And there's nothing there for them to be able to write a penal code, for anything to apply upon the people. There's nowhere where they can use Title 18 or Title 26. As the tax court, 18 as the penal code, and use it against the people. We didn't give them that power to write the statutes for us, and that goes right on down to the states. They take that power, they write that power in for themselves, but we never gave it to them. They have no power unless it be given to them by the people, and it's in the Constitution. And if it's not in the Constitution, they have no power, no authority over us whatsoever. But if people don't know these things, how can they defend themselves? How can they rule and consent to their government? How can they make sure that the people being elected know the Constitution if you don't know the Constitution? This is something I'm going to beat to death, and I have been beaten to death for years, and I'm going to continue to beat it to death. People need to get educated, and anybody that is not doing it right now is really hurting themselves, hurting your family and hurting your neighbor and hurting all the people here in the United States, ultimately, we have to step up. We have to take it. We got to get it done. As I said, Trump's doing a great job, and he can return liberty back to us to some degree, but we have to be able to receive it and run with it and take the authority over. There is going to be a huge power vacuum in Washington, a huge power vacuum across this United States when this deep state is finally, you know, rooted out and destroyed. And the question is, who's going to fill that void? Because that void will be the consenters of our government. Will it be government itself or again? Will we find ourselves right back from where we started from? Shame on us if we don't step up and do the right thing now. Shame on us if any, and again, you know, people are coming in here and they want to get help with courts, and we've got all kinds of stuff to help, but they need to become educated. You can't just deal with your one problem and walk away. You know, it's going to get you, and you're not going to succeed on any of these things ultimately if you don't have the whole picture and work on your education. And again, these are not difficult things, you know, not at all. As a matter of fact, they're all logical and obvious. They're self-evident things. Once you hear them and see them, that makes all the sense in the world. It's called common sense. It's what's right. It's the difference between, you know, good and evil. It's that which is just and not that which is unjust. The clarity between those two is clear. It's light and dark. It's just very clear. You know, again, going back to all of the statutes and codes and regulations and all those things, all of that was written for them. Each title focuses in on a particular group of people within government. The administration has I believe that's Title I, okay, or Title III, but I think it's Title I. Congress has laws by that they operate by, okay. The FBI, the CIA, all of these agencies, they have some title that affects and focuses in on the controlling them. And rightly so. And what I've read and looked at makes all the sense in the world for them. It's good stuff. It really is. It's when they get to write these laws and these statutes and controlling the people, that's where the problem begins. And that's where the law-breaking begins. But they do it why? Because the people don't know. Because we're ignorant. And I speak to myself first. You know, I'm no different than anyone else. It's just that I decided I'm going to get educated. And I have been educating myself for quite a few years now. And I certainly hope that our long-term members are doing the same thing. And I certainly hope the new people who are coming up will join us with us, not just to come to use us to help them in court, which we will do, okay? But they need to step up for themselves. They can't go to someone else to take care of the business. No one could defend you better than you. Because you know the story, you know the facts, you know what's going on, you know what's right and wrong in the details, okay? You just need to know how to express it and how to bring it out. Because that's all that law is, really. Natural law is all about the facts. You know, just give me the facts and I'll win the case. That's all you need. You don't need any statutes or any of those things. We do need to know what our unalienable rights are. And we do need to know what their jurisdictions are. And that is that, of course, we do cover. And again, it's obvious stuff. Very simple, not complex. Remember, anything that is really seriously complex and deep and just seems to be overwhelming is really built up of a lot of simple things. It's like building blocks. And you get a very, you know, complex structure. But it goes back to the basic little thing, a little part here, a little part here, a little part here, a little part here, and you look at it as a whole, it becomes something complex. But if you break it down to the little parts, such as law, such as the construction of law, and especially, you know, if you go into the titles and look into certain things to turn them around against themselves and look into the jurisdictions, Title 26 is really very interesting, bores you to tears, but interesting to see what they've done. The stupidity of that whole title, the ignorance and the unbelievable things that they say in those titles, and the interpretations and the meanings of words in those titles, okay, it doesn't even apply to us, and it's plain English right there. It doesn't apply to us, and yet people don't know it. Even the lawyers don't seem to know it. So, anyway, I guess that brings me to the end of that. Do we have any questions? or anything, Jan?
Well, I have about 4 announcements and 3 questions tonight.
Okay. Go right ahead with the announcements.
Okay. At least a month ago, maybe longer, we announced John's latest filing and noted that it would be huge. And we requested volunteers to mail a copy out to designated people. Now, we've talked of maybe 500 to 1,000 pages total. It's a lot for a little slow printer, but some people
We're going to reduce that tremendously because we're not going to include the memorandums. We'll locate. Look, they can go to the memorandums and get them right from the court. We're going to be filing them in two different cases. Okay, one we have where we're under the auspices of the court where we file everything, and that's still open and that's still there, and we're still filing. And the other one will be the new one opening, which is decision time. But I'm thinking maybe the memorandums, they'll be referred to, but they can either come to our website to get them, or let them know where they can get the memorandums or any attachments and proofs and all that stuff, and then we'll also, of course, be filing in the court, so they'll be able to get it there also. So that'll reduce the paper requirement quite a bit. And I'm hoping it'll be less than 100 pages. You know, I keep thinking maybe 30 or 40, but as I keep looking and studying and making notes and throwing paragraphs of this here and paragraphs of that there, I have a feeling it's going to end up to be quite a few pages. But, again, it's not going to be 500. It's not going to be 1,000. It may be at most 100 pages. And that would have to be served via mail with a return receipt card on it. That, of course, the return card is about $3 or $4, and the mailing for this particular paper in an envelope, probably about $10-$11. So every mailing is going to cost someone about $15 at the most, I would imagine. We'll find out exactly when we get to that point because we'll make the weight and check it with the post office and see what the mailing costs are. And then I'll double-check the cost of the certified mail with the return slip, which, again, I'm sure is around $4. So we need, we're going to serve it to all the people, the main people involved, you know, to the U.S. Congress, both houses, to, of course, the United States Supreme Court. And we'll send a copy over for purpose of an information and letting them know what we're doing, both at the Justice Department and also with the President. But we need to send it to all 50 governors. We need to send it to all 94 federal district courts. So right there, we need about 140 people or even people, less than, let's say, 70 people saying, well, I'll do 2 of them or 3 of them. But we need everybody's participation. It's time for everybody to get up off their rear ends and participate because we do have a lot of people that are not participating. And we need that participation. Look, people expect to be ignorant and free. If they expect to have their liberties without doing anything, they're going to sit on their rear ends and wait for someone else to do it. Well, I'm going to tell you something. Not that someone else is not doing it. And you are that someone else. So please, get your name and your phone number and information, your basic information, which we have most of it anyway, but just confirm it. You have to volunteer. Get your information to Jan. Tell Jan, look, I'm interested in helping. When the time comes, I will file 1, or I will file 2, or I will file 5, okay? And then we will meet out all the information, the addresses and everything, to be put onto those, we'll set up the paperwork and everything, and you the download right off, it'll be PDFs, you'll be able to just print it right out. But as far as who you mail it to, we'll tell you, one of the 94 federal district courts or one of the 50 governors. And if we can get enough people involved, we want to go even further than that, okay? You know, everyone should get a copy of this to their sheriff, okay? Everyone should get a copy of this to their state legislators, you know? So if you are in your state, say, well, okay, I'll volunteer my sheriff, I'll volunteer my governor, I'll volunteer my two legislators, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, and I'll volunteer for 1 of the 94 federal district courts. So if you volunteer 5 papers to be sent out, and we will give you all of the labels necessary to put on this and get it out, Well, we'll produce the labels for you, and all you do is print them off on your computer, all right, and get those five out. Yeah, it's going to cost you some money, let's say $15 a piece. So you're looking at, what, $75? Big investment for Liberty. Big investment, huh? Come on, we can do it. Please, every single person in this room should do it. Every person listening on our live radio stream should be doing it. Anybody who's downloading our MP3s should be doing it. Anybody who's listening through other ways that this thing, that our you know, Monday night meeting is broadcasted out there, you should do it. We need participation. If the people don't care about their liberty, well, they're going to prove it with this case right here. We've spent years to put this case together, and believe me, we've got a lot of evidence. We have sent so many papers to these people, and they have acquiesced. They have done nothing. We told them that we are being attacked and destroyed by enemies, both foreign and domestic. We reported it to the United States Supreme Court. We were very specific on what was going on, and they did nothing. We reported it to Congress, both houses, and they did nothing. We reported it to the president, too, and he's busy doing something about it. But these other people are not. And it's time to call them out from where it's at. Time to do what's got to be done. And they either are going to obey the law and do the right thing, resign, or get indicted. That's their choices. But we have to be serious. The people have to be serious, and you'll prove your seriousness by getting up here and sending an email to jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. Say, I'm in. I could do five. I could do my state plus one of the 94 districts. And then we'll have others. You know, we get the 94 districts and the states. We'll do more. Okay? But get your name up there and let's get going. Take care of your state and at least one, and the federal district in your state. And if someone else is doing that, then maybe you could do four or five federal districts. Or maybe you could do another state. Or maybe, if you live in New York and New York's being done, we'll do Jersey. We'll give you Jersey. Get Jersey done and one of the 94 federal districts. Time to get up. All hands on deck for this one. Time is coming. It's running short. Now is the time to prepare. Let us know and get educated. Jim?
Okay, since we made that announcement initially, I've had 10 volunteers so far, so we need a lot more. Okay, the next thing we need, just a couple of volunteers to research contact information for the shows that we would like to get John and Gerard on. Now, we've compiled a short list, and we would like also any suggestions you might have on shows that would be appropriate. And we need somebody to just research the contact information, how it's done, whether it's by email or snail mail or phone call and the numbers and so on. Then we need several research to track down the names and contact information for groups that have supported Liberty groups in the past that we can mail a copy of our new donation request letter to. I don't have any way of gauging how many people have copied the letter off the website and mailed it out, so I don't have any good feeling for how that's working. We also need individuals just to send out the donation request letter locally. You may know of a business in the area that is fairly well-to-do, and the people may be liberty-minded and so on. If you think they might, just download the letter, fill it out, and send it in. Not a volunteer for any of those things. Just send an email to jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and I will add your name and so on and send the required information to you so you can get started on it. Now, that's all of the announcements. I have three questions, John, if you're ready.
Okay, yeah, and just to let everybody know, the Q&A session is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, *6. So start piling in now. Anybody's got a question or a comment, maybe an idea or correction or whatever. Go ahead, Jim.
Yep, *6 and a 1 will get you in. Okay, this first is a New York State case. And it says, how do I go about getting an appeal on a case that has already been sentenced? If he admitted to being a U.S. citizen, how to go about this without a denaturalization? Would he need to be naturalized first? He's a child and is given 6 years and wasn't represented accordingly. The attorney ignored information that could have helped the case. The attorney changed the details of the story 3 times. Trickery in pleading guilty due to a witness after repeatedly changing the details of what allegedly happened. A motion is requesting and a demand is... The point I'm making is a loved one was railroaded in this case. How to proceed as a private citizen versus a U.S. citizen. He has witnessed death and was a victim of police brutality, and his eye is messed up for life. They keep switching facilities where he is. Any help?
Okay, they don't mention whether it's a federal case or a state case or anything.
No.
But I'll tell you what, doesn't really matter too much. But of course, to have the details would be better to be able to respond. But it really can be very easy. Challenge a jurisdiction. I don't care how old the case is. Once you establish the fact and realize, wait, they didn't have jurisdiction over me, go challenge that jurisdiction. And then you got to press it all the way up into the federal court because that's what you will be required to do. They're not going to let you go or let that person go. So challenging jurisdiction because they don't have it. People are prosecuted by statutes, okay, which is unlawful in a court of law, okay? Also, to prosecute one of the people in anything but a court of law is null and void. It cannot be done. The Constitution is clear. This is the people's business. It's not the state's business. It's not the state's business to try you. It's not the state's business to decide what the penalty is. This is the people's business, okay? And yeah, there's a judge or a magistrate in the court, and if he's a judge, then he's wearing his magistrate cap because all judges are magistrates, okay? So a judge can sit in on an equity court and make rulings, or he can sit in on an equity court and administrate to the will of the jury. The other thing is all these juries are tainted. They're statutory. Let's start off with the grand jury, okay? If you were found, indicted by a grand jury and they use statutes to do it, well, there you go. It's statutes. It's null and void. It's not a common law grand jury. It's not we the people. It's a controlled entity. Same thing. If you're in court and you're being tried by a trial jury with statutes, and the whole process, you got all these lawyers and everybody working with statutes and defending this and fighting that with statutes and statutes and codes or whatever, okay? Well, you're not in a court of law. You're in a court of equity. I don't even know that you're in that. I don't even know what you're in. You're in jurisdictions unknown is what you are in. That's what it is. And so it is really, a court that really has no power and no authority. But again, how did they get away with this? Because the people are ignorant, they don't know the Constitution, and they don't know the common law. That's how they get away with it. And for those of people who are listening in and have never been hit by these things or involved by these things or fall under these things, it's only a matter of time. That's all it is. You better get educated now so you can defend yourself. So I would challenge you. I start there with challenging jurisdiction. But there's other things that might be able to be done. Depends on what court they're in, number one, on how it would be approached. And then also it depends on what the charges were and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of mystery in the case. But generally speaking, all these cases can follow that procedure or point that I just laid out. What's next?
Okay, last week we had a caller, I believe his name was Greg, that asked a similar question. This person says, I'm quite certain that the authorities here in Redford Township, Michigan, had my phone tapped a few years ago and over the past year, plus gave access to the court administrator here and their prosecutor in order to eavesdrop on conversations I had with people who were trying to help me with my court case. I know you may think it's an unusual accusation, but I know that it's true. And others who've had phone conversations with me about what to do in my court case believe so too. do you know of any way to find out and have this officially verified in a way that can be used as evidence against the perpetrators or violators?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm being repeated somewhere. Am I coming through you, Jan? All right, anyway, I have no idea on how to really deal with that situation. You have to research and figure out if there's any way you can find out whether they indeed are recording your calls to begin with, listening in. Of course, that's a crime unless they have a warrant to be able to do that. So they, again, other than that, I have nothing else that I could even say about that. And I wouldn't deal, look at in a lot of these cases, I wouldn't deal too much with the issues. I would be dealing with the facts of the matter that they don't have the jurisdiction. That's where I'd be sitting and talking and making sure you're getting your due process, which you're not. You're not getting your due process if you're in a quasi, de facto court that operates under statutes and makes it up as they go, because they do all those things. They literally make it up as they go. They use a statute if it benefits them here, and if the same statute doesn't benefit them over there, they'll use it and they'll interpret it in a different way. And it just goes on and on and on. And why are we here? Because we're ignorant to the common law and we're ignorant to our founding documents. That's why we're here. So, yeah, I don't know that I have any other answer for that. So, what else?
Okay, next question. I have phone, internet, and TV through my cable company and have had for over 30 years. At least four times a year, they increase their service fees. I've called each time, and they have given me the story that the maintenance fee, Wi-Fi equipment fee will be increased, or the programming fee or taxes will increase, and they have no control over it. A year and a half ago, I signed up for a special that the company was offering for a lower rate than I was paying. Since that two-year contract, the rates continue to climb, and if I cancel my subscription, I'll be charged an early termination fee. I would like to know if you would consider this a breach of contract on the part of the cable company, since the rates keep jumping for the same services that I signed up for, and I have no recourse. Is there anything I can do?
Well, I wish those were my problems. There are people out there with IRS problems and other things, but it is true that these people in these corporations take advantage of us, especially, in these particular areas, cable and even phones and electric companies. I mean, all of that stuff. And I'm sure they do play games with their contracts and so on and so forth. But look at, it's pretty simple. If you can show the facts and they're doing things outside of a contract, you can make them clear on paper. You can take it to court. You could take it into an equity court and win it. You should be able to win it. That's the way I would go if I wanted to battle that. But I wouldn't bother battling it right now because it's not worth it. The money you're going to save at this point isn't worth it. We have more serious things to be concerned with, and you're going to have to pay money to get into the court to deal with it on an equity side of things, in an equity court. Of course, that's where I would deal with this kind of a problem. A simple contract. But, you're going up against the establishment, so the judge will probably rule for them anyway. And again, it's going to cost you, I know here in New York, it's $210, I think, it's $95 for the index number, and then you pay for what's called the RJI, which is a request for judicial intervention, and that costs $210, I believe, so it's like $305 to file a case. And of course, that's unlawful to the people. That only works with the corporations and all these equity cases working within the codes and the regulations and so on. But when it comes into the people's business, that shouldn't be. Even in an equity court, it should not be. Justice should be free. But, of course, people millions of dollars sometimes to get justice, and they still don't get it, Once we get on the other side of things, that's when I would file these kind of suits. I wouldn't bother with them right now. I'd focus my time and energies towards other things, like let's save this nation. Let's get these papers out. Let's put our money there. Let's get behind this case and let's stand up when the time comes. Let's get the word out. Let's get people, let's get us interviews, you know, with some of these YouTube channels, with radio programs, internet radio, anything, TV programs, you know, get us out there and let's get the message out to the people. Work with us to get the stuff into the schools once we get on the other side of things, you know. Let's make America free again, and then let's keep it free again. So, all right, what else you got? Oh, one other thing. I just want to make this point because it was brought up, and I did make the point about the U.S. citizen. And, you know, look, I am a U.S. citizen. That's what I am. I don't care what they say it means. It doesn't mean anything. That's all fraud. That's all deceit. It's fraud. It means nothing. And even with that, they can't say, oh, you're a citizen. Oh, you know, you're underneath our rule, and now you have to obey the 14th Amendment, which we give you civil rights instead of natural. Nah, they're not going to say any of that. We're going to kick their rear ends coming from another direction. We'll keep them constantly. When you go into court, by the way, if you don't have them on the run, if they're not on the defense and you're not controlling the court, then you're losing, okay? You have to be on constantly on the offense. And when you find yourself defending, you got a problem. You got to figure out what it is and get that turned around real quick. Okay? But anyway, going back to this U.S. citizen, we gave them the power and the authority under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. Okay? So they have the powers. We've given them the authority to create citizens, make people citizens that come into this country, and they're called U.S. citizens. And why are they called U.S. citizens? You know, when you get into a state, you'll be New York citizen. You could be of New York or Jersey or Connecticut. But the point is I could be a New York citizen today, and tomorrow, just driving through New Jersey, I could be a New Jersey citizen, get all the rights and everything that any New Jerseyan has. And so on. You know, we shouldn't run away from these things. We should bring them back to what they really mean, because all they did is tried to play games with words. I mean, look, I was talking about U.S. Title 26 a little while ago and some of the codes and things in there. The word state means Puerto Rico. Let me repeat that. The word state means Puerto Rico. So go figure that out and then start reading it and changing the word state to Puerto Rico, and you'll realize, you know, they're playing around with territories. And that's why Puerto Rico has not become a state yet. They should have become a state a long time ago. And their other territories should have become states a long time ago. It's the Philippines. But they got to keep them that way. They got to keep them there so they have these territories that they can write these crazy laws about and then fool us with a word game talking, well, you live in the state, right? And yeah, you know, whatever state you live in, but you're really talking about Puerto Rico. Go read the law. It's unbelievable. I think I'm doing a paper on that. I know I'm doing a paper on that right now. But anyway, what else we got?
Oh, that was the last question, John.
Okay. Can we move on then? We're done?
Yes, we're done.
Okay, star 6, if you want to get into the queue, by the way, star 6 and a 1. We're going to move over to Brent. I see Brent is here. Brent is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. I see you're unmuted, but we don't hear you, Brent.
Thank you. I'm here.
There you go.
Thanks, John. And this is Brent, Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com. My comments here are my own and are not necessarily the points of view of anybody connected with National Liberty Alliance. I make them because I'm speaking right now. I don't attribute necessarily what I say to them. On Saturday mornings, we're holding class, if you want to participate. We went through 45 weeks of the common law of evidence, and now we're going through Lord willing, 45 weeks of the common law of contracts. And we're into about week 15 or something. If you want to participate, you can watch. Go to commonlawyer.com and click on the link there that tells you about the Saturday morning evidence class. Click on the link, and you can watch me. You can see me. I can't see you. But there comes a time when you can, at the end, when I'm done making a presentation, you can ask questions. We'd be glad to have you. We're talking about, as we move through the Declaration of, no, the Constitution of the United States, we're into Article 1. We've gone through the Declaration of 76, clause by clause and blow by blow. We're into Article 1 of the United States Constitution, and we just got to the end of that comment of our Constitution concerning habeas corpus. Habeas means we have in Latin, and corpus means body. We have the body. It's an abbreviation, Latin abbreviation, for the idea that you have the body, bring it to the court, and prove that you have a right, a lawful right, to jail this person that you have jailed. Well, we got to the end of it. I quoted Justice Joseph Story. He who never quotes is never quoted. He said this: to understand the meaning of the habeas corpus clause, said Supreme Court Justice Story, it will be necessary to have recourse to the common law. For in no other way can we arrive at the true definition. It is justly esteemed, habeas corpus, the writ, habeas corpus, is justly esteemed the bulwark of personal liberty, applied in every case of illegal restraint. For every restraint upon a man's liberty is, in the eyes of the law, an imprisonment. Wherever may be the place, or whatever may be the manner in which the restraint is effected. Now notice here, Justice Story, he assumes that liberty is a restraint of your locomotion of your body. Locomotion. That means your ability to get up and move from one place to the other. Now that was the popular view of liberty. Matter of fact, it was all people thought about. They didn't want to be jailed without lawful reason. And to them, that's ultimate liberty. If you have the freedom to get up and go where you want to go. Well, in 1765, when William Blackstone wrote his famous Commentaries on the Laws of England, also called Commentaries on the Common Law, because the law of England is the common law, it was at that time. What in those four volumes, which were reprints of his lectures of that year, he defines liberty in its most fundamental form as freedom of locomotion of your body. You go where you want to go, when you want to go. If you can't do that, if somebody is restraining you from doing that, you're not free. You don't have liberty. I used to live in a place called Wickenburg. Wickenburg, named after Henry Wickenburg. Henry Wickenburg was a Swiss immigrant that migrated to what is now territory called Arizona. And he was looking for gold. And he got separated from his partners. He was out in the middle of the desert. And he was pretty thirsty. He didn't know where he was. Matter of fact, he was hundreds, if not thousands of miles near from any place, any settlement. And he saw a buzzard perched on a tor, T-O-R. That's an outcrop of rock sticking up out of the desert floor. Pretty big, about as big as a man, maybe not quite. A buzzard, a vulture. They call them vultures out there. And he took a rock, he picked up a rock and threw it at the vulture and hit the outcropping of rock. A piece of it broke off. And he saw that yellow stuff woven in there. It was gold. And he had found a vein of gold that was in that rock, and he followed that rock down. He was on his hands and knees busting rock right away. And that became the largest gold-producing underground mine in Arizona until World War II, when it was shut down as a non-essential industry during the war, and it's never been opened since. Well, in that little town there, where Wickenburg's buried right there in town, well, on the edge of town there, in that town, there's a tree right at the center of town where two roads cross. I think there used to be stop signs there. There's a stop light now, but it's still just one crossroads. And that old juniper tree, it's a very old tree, and it's called the jail tree because that's where they used to jail men when they were binding them over for trial because they didn't have jailhouse. So they just chained them to that tree, and that's the way they jailed them. Well, if they chain a man to a tree, he can't go where he wants to go when he wants to go upon impulse. And that was the way that our common law most fundamentally defined liberty, freedom of bodily locomotion. Why did our common law do that? Again, I'm going back to basics. I've mentioned this before. It bears repeating. Freedom is defined as fundamentally at common law as freedom of bodily locomotion, freedom to travel. There's another way to say it, because it is the command that God gave to our grandpa and grandma, Adam and Eve. It's the most fundamental command given to mankind. It's called some people call it the Adamic covenant. And without that, there is no law. All law is based upon the Adamic covenant, which really is the covenant that spreads throughout the Bible and culminates in the coming of the Messiah to reestablish man's ability and his desire to do that. To do what? To scatter out upon the faces of the land. That's what the covenant of God with mankind most fundamentally is, and all of the law of God that came after that, that has been revealed, his will, the will of God, the will of the sovereign, his law, that's what the Bible's all about. All of that came down to not restraining a man's liberty of locomotion. That's why habeas corpus is called the great writ, is in fulfillment. Fulfillment, ensurement of the fulfillment of that fundamental duty of man. It's two parts, be fruitful, multiply, and scatter. And all of us can participate in that, even if we're not multiplying anymore. We are still part of that multiplication, and we can still scatter. And that's what we're commanded to do. And that's why we call it the law of the land, because scattering, if we scatter, we cover the land and we dominate it for the glory of our Maker. And that's why it's called the law of the land. So it's no small matter that our common law takes this Christian principle. People say, well, all of our law in America is based upon the Bible, based upon the Ten Commandments, they say. Is that true? Well, in one sense it is, but more fundamental than that, it's based upon as all law, all true law is based upon that two-part covenant given to mankind in the early chapters of the Bible. And it reflects, as Justice Joseph's story of the U.S. Supreme Court says, reflects the reality that there never was a time that Christianity did not lie at the foundation of our common law. Our Constitution of the United States is a brief of common law government. Common law. This read to you here what Justice Joseph's story said, and he's right about habeas corpus. To understand the meaning of habeas corpus, he said, it will be necessary to have recourse to the common law, for in no other way can we arrive at the true definition. Well, let's go on to the next clause. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 3. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. Now, Article 1 is about the Congress of the United States, the legislative branch. Our common law government says there are three branches of government, and they are co-equal. They exist in perpetual tension. Never does one have the authority to trump the other. So each of them are to operate independently and to ensure themselves and each person in those branches that everything that is done lawfully according to the courses of our common law. Well, this thing about bill of attainder, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 3, is part of our common law's way of saying this fulfills the first principles of the law of God. What is the first principle of the law of God? Well, separation of the powers of government, number one. We see that in Isaiah, clearly. But here we're talking about something our common law calls bill of attainder. What is a bill of attainder? A bill of attainder is a legislative act to punish a person without affording him the right to a jury trial. Let me say it again. A bill of attainder. A bill. It's a bill. That means it's a piece of legislation. Attainder. That means it's, well, again, we're back to these Latin roots. But it's a legislative act to punish a person without affording him the right to a jury trial. That's a bill of attainder. Let me put it more bluntly. A bill of attainder is Congress, the legislative branch, declaring a person guilty of a crime. That's what a bill of attainder is. It is Congress, the legislative branch, exercising the judicial power. That's what a bill of attainder is. We declare and we pass a bill and we declare that Brent Allen Winters, that's me, is guilty of the felony of conspiracy against the United States. Well, our common law says that's not lawful. No, the legislative branch can make conspiracy against the United States a crime by legislation. Well, it is a crime already, but they can just pass legislation recognizing that. The president signs it, but then in order for somebody to be convicted, he has to, the judicial branch does that, and they do it by jury trial. So that's what a bill of attainder is. Then it says no ex post facto law shall be passed. Now, watch me close on this. An ex post facto law, ex post facto, that means out of after the fact, after the fact. But what that means is, to put it in simple English, it means to make criminal an act already done that no authority had declared illegal before the act was done. In other words, I go out and I decide that I want to form a grand jury. Now, watch me close on this. I form a grand jury, and I convene the grand jury, and the grand jury says, we declare Barack Obama guilty of treason against the United States. No, we don't declare him guilty. We say that any man who commits treason against the United States is guilty. Well, and then say that Barack Obama has committed treason for something he's done, and then declare why. I'm not making this as clear as I want to, but what I'm trying to say is, let me try something different. An ex post facto law violates the common law separation of powers because both are Congress's attempt to exercise judicial power. If Congress, for example, declares something illegal that somebody has already done, but it wasn't illegal before Congress declared it, well then, that's an ex post facto law and it's not allowed to be done. Involved in a case once where some fella was accused by the IRS of breaking the tax laws. And what he was doing was establishing a series of trusts. And he said by the time you had transferred money from one trust to another trust to another trust, because trusts, according to our tax law, are what we call pass-through arrangements. The tax liability passes through them. And by the time you get to the last trust, he says there's no tax liability. And the way he did it, it sure looked that way. And there probably wasn't. Well, anyway, he was taken to criminal trial, and he was convicted, and he appealed. He appealed the case, and the appellate court says, no, you can't convict this man of that. Why? Well, you said it was a crime after he did it. It wasn't a crime before he did it. It still isn't a crime because no legislature has passed any bill saying it's a crime. There was nothing on the books when he did it whereby he may know it's a crime. Nothing put him on notice it was a crime. It's not written anywhere. So they reversed the decision. That's because they were claiming the IRS was trying to pull this ex post facto stuff. I want to make an important footnote here. Ex post facto only applies to criminal behavior. Congress or a state legislature trying to say something's a crime, that has never been a crime until they said it, and say it after it was done. Somebody had done it, then they turn around and say, we just decided that was a crime, and now we're going to make sure you're prosecuted and sent to jail. That's called ex post facto. So you got bill of attainder. That's where a legislature, like Congress, exercises judicial powers and declares somebody guilty of a crime, and ex post facto law, which is related in a way because it is, again, the legislative power, declaring something to be a crime that wasn't a crime before the fellow they're trying to get did the act. And both of them, of course, are used to go after political enemies. Now, after the English Civil War, as it is popularly called, between the Crown of England and Parliament, the Puritan Party, they were the Christian Puritans that came to America, many of them, before and after that war. One of the reasons they came to America and populated New England was because they didn't want to get involved in that war. But they did support Parliament. They said, and this is fundamental republicanism, they said the king is not running things. The king is not sovereign. That's stupid. That's scary. If he's the law, we're all in trouble. It's a one-man show. That's tyranny. They said, no, Parliament is sovereign in England. Is that our common law? Now, that's what's called republicanism, is where the legislative branch is the trumping branch of everything and has all the power. That was the theory at that time. And some of the states in America tried that. They tried to make their state legislatures supreme. And they found out real quick. They found out real quick that that is even more dangerous than making one man supreme. That, friends, neighbors, and kin, is called republicanism. It is tyranny. Republicanism is tyranny. And there was no difference. The people that invented republicanism and democracy are attributed with it were the ancient Greek city-states, and they made no distinction between democracy and republicanism. They were flip sides of the same coin, and they are. Republicanism is a form of majority rule. Now, when people say we have a republic, is that true? Yes. Does our Constitution say that the general government in Washington, D.C. guarantees to every state a republican form of government? Yes. Do we have a republican form of government in our national government and our state government? Yes. Why do I say that? Because every one of them has a legislative branch, and that legislative branch has the power of legislation. No other branch has that. But true republicanism, as it has been understood and is understood in the communist countries, the Soviet Socialist Republic, the Republic of China, the French Republic, that was just pure bloodbath and tyranny, all of these republics of the modern world are pure republics. In other words, pure republicanism. They say, although they don't practice it, but they say that the legislative branch is the supreme authority in their country. You don't want to live like that. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine Congress being in charge of our country? They're almost there. It's pretty bad. I wouldn't trust those fellows to, as far as they could throw an overweight man. That would be pure tyranny. That's why our common law government is co-equal powers. The Congress or the legislature does not trump the presidency or the governorship if it's a state. And the governor's power does not trump the judicial power. And the judicial power does not trump the power of the president. No, they live in a constant, never-ending, perpetual Mexican standoff. That's our common law. None of them trump the other. Well, let's look at one other one here. I'll start it and then we'll quit. Section 9, Clause 4. This will be a good one. No capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. This clause remains in force. Congress must allot the burden of any direct tax among the states in proportion to their populations. A direct tax is an unavoidable tax. It is a tax one cannot escape by either shifting it to another person, or the only way he could escape it is, well, he would have to forfeit his right to life, liberty, or property. He can't practically escape it. It's called a direct tax. If the government comes along and says every person in the United States whose head is hot, in other words, who's breathing, every person shall pay $1 of tax every year to the United States government. Well, right there, you'd have a lot of money, but it wouldn't be a pinch in the bucket to help us that much. What's $350 million? That's what it'd be. But that'd be a direct tax, because there's no way you can pass that on to somebody else. That's direct. You got to pay it. It's a, and because it's direct, you can also say that's a tax on your life. Does the government have the right to tax your very life? No, because God gave you your life. And the government doesn't have authority to tax your life. Now, that's a direct tax. What's an indirect tax? An indirect tax is a tax you can't avoid. For example, a tax on liquor. You can avoid that. Don't buy the liquor. A tax on tobacco. You can avoid that. Don't buy cigars or cigarettes or pipe tobacco. That's called avoidable tax. You can avoid it that way. A sales tax is also avoidable. Well, why do I say that? Because the man who is charged the sales tax, one of the men that's charged, is the merchant. He has to pay it. But he avoids it by passing it on to the consumer. If somebody buys a cigar, he'll pay the tobacco tax. He'll pay the tobacco tax that the merchant is charged, the government charges the merchant for, because the merchant, well, gasoline tax, same way. Can you avoid paying taxes on gasoline? Yeah, two ways. Number one, don't buy gasoline. You don't have to own a car. You don't have to run a gasoline lawnmower if you don't want to. You can ride a bicycle and stay around home. You can avoid that tax. But number two, you can, the merchant who pays it, he can avoid it. He does that by passing it along to the fellow who chooses to buy the gas. Those are indirect taxes. I want to make that distinction. I'll do it, Lord willing, next time, next week when we start again. I'll go over that again. And then we'll get more deeply into this whole thing about income tax. Thanks for allowing me a few minutes, John Gerard, and we're back to you.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Okay, we're going to open up for questions, comments, corrections. Anybody have anything? Star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. We've got a few people in the queue right now, so we'll start with Barbara from New York. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi. I had a question about admiralty law. Actually, I've got two questions. The first is, since the Title 28 got admiralty jurisdiction, and it's the procedure.
Title 18 you're thinking of is what you're talking about. That is under the law of the sea, admiralty law, maritime law, and so on. But go ahead. Title 28 really is the rules. For all of the titles to follow, rules of procedure. Rules of procedure of evidence, and so on.
But so Title 28 is not admiralty law?
Well, Title 28 is statutory. It's equity. It really is the rules for the equity court is what Title 28 is. I guess that's a good way to put it. Okay, Title 18 is where you find the penal code. That's where you find the things, you know, you can't have a weapon, you can't do this, you can't do that, all these can't do's.
Okay, so then, but you have in the course this amendment from 1966 that says that civil law and admiralty jurisdiction are combined with each other.
Well, that's unlawful. That's repugnant. Therefore, it's not a law. It means nothing. It's null and void. See, it doesn't matter okay. what... Look, this is what you have to really understand. One of the geniuses, okay, of our Constitution is the Bill of Rights. When the Constitution was written and a debate took place, there were a lot of people that called themselves anti-federalist. Not that they were really against the federal, you know, creating a federal government or you know, binding us together. They weren't necessarily against that. As a matter of fact, Jefferson was an anti-federalist. And so there were certain things in the Constitution that, you know, could run us into trouble. You know, it wasn't clear. There was nothing, there was not enough restrictions, okay? As a matter of fact, this is what was written, hang on a second, in the when the Bill of Rights was introduced and brought into the law, you know, and it was signed. I think it was a 1791 or 92. I'll tell you in a minute. Goodness, where is this? The Bill of Rights. Come on. Here it is. Okay, this is the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and it's very, very important to understand the points that they're really trying to make on the power and the authority over the, you know, to it's really the capstone of the Constitution. It controls the Constitution. Okay. So let me read this. Hang on. Where is it? The preamble. Okay. The convention of the number of the states having at the time of their adoption the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the grounds of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Okay, so there was, I think there was three, maybe four states, I don't remember, maybe Brent knows and he can pipe in, but I think there was three states who refused to sign without, you know, adding the amendments. And they agreed that they would add these amendments at a later time, which was just a couple of years later. It was 1789 when the Constitution was, you know, what would you call it? Well, actually, it took effect. We became a government, okay? And I think it was 91 when the Bill of Rights became effective and signed into law. So when you read the Constitution, if it violates any of these 10 amendments plus, okay, not just these 10 amendments, you know, that's just the beginning of our unalienable rights. We have a lot more than that. But they really strategically and carefully written these 10 amendments in such a fashion, and originally I think it was 11 or 12, but really two of them were combined it into one, and I think another one combined it into one. So everything was really there that they wanted. But if it violates your unalienable right in any way, shape, or form, then it's null and void. So you take the Constitution, there's also restrictions in Article 1, Section 9 of our Constitution, which comes up obviously after Article 8. Article 8 is the listing of the authorities that we've given them. But then Section 9 focuses in on a lot of restrictions. For instance, it says the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. That's in our Constitution, okay? Uh-huh. No bill of attainder or ex pro facto law shall be passed. No captation or other direct taxes shall be laid. No tax on duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another. I mean, it goes on, no money shall be drawn from the treasury, put into consequential appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of receipts and expenditures and so on and so forth. No title of nobility. You know, so they already had a bunch of restrictions. And then they also added some more. Section 10 kind of leans some more on this. And then, of course, the 10 amendments. So our Constitution, I think, is pretty strong. And so if it doesn't line up, if we didn't give them the power, the authority, they don't have it. Okay, they got to show us what they got the power and the authority to do, whatever it is that they think they're doing. Where are you getting that power? You need a jurisdiction. We didn't give it to you, or we did give it to them. Okay, so this is how you got to look at things. But go ahead.
Well, you were saying when you described in the course Title 18 that it's important to know that it uses the admiralty jurisdiction
right.
because it undermines the law of the land. So I just wanted to figure out whether to find out whether any of the other titles in the U.S. Code had that admiralty maritime jurisdiction.
Well, all of the titles give a jurisdiction per se. Title 26 doesn't. But in a roundabout way, they've got some words in there to play some games, which I'm working on that right now. But all of the titles, identify jurisdiction. Half of the titles, there are 56 titles, and half of the titles are what's called positive law, okay? The other half are not positive law. So basically, it's like regulations, and, the cases would be heard in what's called administrative courts. But half of them, the other ones, would be heard in a federal district court, okay? And those are the ones called positive law. Now, the jurisdiction, for instance, and I think it's, again, I mentioned earlier, I think it's Title I. I'm going to have to look this up to make sure because I bring this up from time to time, and I'm not really sure. But I think that controls the president. So the jurisdiction is the control of the president. I guess you'd put it in simple terms. Okay. Congress has certain controls also. They've written for themselves and so on and so forth. And there's a title for that. All of the agencies of government have a title written for that to govern them. Half of them is positive laws heard in a court equity. And the other half would be administrative courts, which are lower court. And the powers or the authorities or the punishments is a lot less in those areas than it would be in the courts of law. But go ahead.
None of the titles refer to us,
by the way, nor should they.
What's that?
None of the titles refer to the people, nor should they. Although they use them, and how do they get away with it? How are they getting away with this? It's very simple, because we're ignorant to the Constitution and the common law. That's how come they're getting away with it.
So Title 26's jurisdiction would be just a contract between the tax court. It's
very, very strange, strangely written, and it really Congress should be ashamed of themselves. They should be embarrassed. Okay, and the courts that are applying these things, these judges, they're getting paid too much money for these things. They get a stipend. But they should be embarrassed about this. Title 26, okay, has no jurisdiction per se. You can run the word jurisdiction and you won't find it any place. But again, like I said, play games with words, okay? It is purely an administrative court, but they try to make themselves look like a court of law. They say that the tax courts are courts of record, okay? Well, that's an oxymoron to what they're writing there, because it is a court of record is in opposition to everything that Title 26 says. A court of record proceeds without statutes, okay?
Uh-huh.
Where Title 26 is all statutes, and the tax courts proceed according to those statutes, yet they call themselves a court of record, okay?
Okay.
So not true. It's not a court of record. It needs to be challenged. A lot of things need to be taken care of. But Title 26 is the one title that should be done away with completely. The rest of them are lawful as long as they apply them lawfully within the jurisdictions that they're controlling. 18 is abusive.
Yeah. When you're in a courtroom and you hear precedents from other cases are brought up. Does that mean they're doing common law, or are they just mixing it in a superficial way?
Look, they take the federal district courts, and they'll use the conclusions, the final results of a court, and they'll quote that as if it means something in court. It means nothing to me. It should mean nothing to you, it really does nothing for anything. We use the United States Supreme Court. I use that often in order to control judges, okay, in order to get forward the meaning of a word or a phrase to make clear. And remember, these judges are supposed to be operating under American jurisprudence, okay? And American jurisprudence really was established by the United States Supreme Court with their rulings and writings, okay? And they're supposed to be the top dog, the boss. They're responsible for what goes on in these 94 federal district courts. They're supposed to answer to them, and yet they do not. They do not exercise any control over them. They should be chastising some of these judges. That's what they should be doing, chastising these judges for making these decisions. But they themselves also have stepped over their boundaries. Look at, they make decisions on a lot of things that belongs to the people or even belongs to God. Take abortion, okay? Where do they have the power or the authority to get involved in abortion inside of an equity court? Now, that belongs in a court of law. That's God's court. They're stepping on his bounds, on his authority. They think that they can change the laws. The Bible talks about that, as a matter of fact, at the end. They would think they have the power to change the laws. And I do believe that, to some degree, this is what they're talking about also, where the United States Supreme Court has stepped up way above their authority and powers.
Yeah, definitely.
That belongs to the people to decide those things, not. And the people, of course, they not only take an oath for the constitutional oath, but they need to take an oath, a vow to God, okay, that they're going to operate under his principles, and they're going to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy in their deliberations. And they really with an eye on restitution. Okay, not jail. All these people don't belong in jail. They need to be restored. Not only just the people that were injured need to be restored, the people who injured them need to be restored back to a proper way of being within society. And that's what common law does. It works a process of repentance. It works a process. By restoring the person you injured, you also get to see the damages you've done to the person. Okay, and you're working towards restoring those damages. Okay, and at the same time, it can become a form of repentance and bring you back into society. Throw a person in jail, see how great they're going to be going back into society when they come out of there, know?
So you're saying that this whole abortion issue is the issue of life and death. It brings in an unalienable right, and therefore a judge should not be making decisions on it?
That's right. I heard today's news, some judge in some state, it was a federal court, I think it was in California, and something about the licenses or something, a problem with some abortion clinic, and the judge gave the power and the authority for them to continue in their abortions at least until Friday, where they'll have the hearing to make a decision. I mean, just think about that. You can continue to murder people until we decide there's something else on Friday, maybe. Now, I know a lot of people get very upset with that. It's a right of a woman and all these other things. No, I don't care what you say. Go to the Bible. You take your heart and soul and put it into the Bible and read there, and you see what God has to say about these things. And he has nothing nice or good to say about people who destroy life. He says, you do it unto them, you're doing it unto me. You abort that baby, you're aborting me. You kill your neighbor, you're killing me. You lie to your and steal from your neighbor, you're lying and stealing from me. That's what the Bible says.
The child, the children are so wanted by other people to adopt.
Yeah.
So to decide that you're going to, terminate the child,
All right. Anything else?
I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We're going to take our next caller, 612. You got the mic. Give me one second. I got to go hit my phone. My alarm is ringing. Hang on. Hey, sorry about that. Okay, 612, no name.
Hi, it's Trisha in Arizona.
Trisha in Arizona. Go right ahead.
Okay, I talked to Jan actually a few days ago, and he told me I should get on the call and ask my question. I was indicted in 2013 for under Title 18, 286, 287, involved with the 1099 OID, tax loophole, entrapment scheme. That's what I'm calling it.
Look at the jurisdiction. I have jurisdiction. Challenge jurisdiction.
I challenge jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Actually,
are you in a tax court?
Pardon?
What court are you in? You in a court, a federal district court, or are you in a
court? Federal court.
Is it a tax court ruled by Title 26?
It is a federal court. There's no mention of any tax statutes in the indictment.
My question is who's taking you into court? Is the IRS taking you in? The Treasury? Who's taking you to court?
Well, they say the United States of America.
Right, but look, is this an IRS issue?
Yes.
Okay, then you're in a tax court. You're not in a federal district court. You need to remove it into a federal district court. Same building, door next door, that's all. Same floor probably too. Look, there's lots of courtrooms in the federal buildings. So you go up onto the second floor, straight onto the back, for instance, down here in the Southern District of New York, and you go all the way back to the end, and that last door all the way end, well, that's the tax court. Well, you come out that door, and you turn right or left, and you go into another door, you're in a federal district court.
Well, why did they charge me with no IRS statute. They charged me under 18...
Okay, so again, challenge jurisdiction. Again, I don't understand.
I challenged jurisdiction. I put in a habeas. I went right straight to Justice Gorsuch in the Eighth Circuit because I'm originally from Minnesota. This is where it all happened.
Look, you have to do it in a formal way and an obvious way and get the right words out there. We do have some examples up on our website under you know, you can go up to our site and you can go up underneath due process and follow down that page. And we have examples on how to challenge jurisdiction. Then the next thing you do is you got to move that case. If the district court that you're in, okay, first of all, that judge can't hear it, okay? He already believes he's got jurisdiction over you. So you need to get another judge to decide. Okay.
I already tried going to the chief judge.
Got to recuse himself so another judge can decide. And if that doesn't come out right, then you move it towards a reconsideration of decision by a panel of judges. Okay. Then you get three judges to come in and make a decision.
Okay.
And if they go the wrong way too, then you go into appealing it and you go into the circuit court and appeal it.
I understand all that. I've done all that. They keep throwing it back to the trial judge and he keeps denying it all.
Right, but the problem is, I'm going to tell you the problem probably, not necessarily because they're evil anyway, okay, but the problem probably is the way you're wording. You got to understand, they want jurisdiction over you. They got you, they want your jurisdiction. They want to serve the status quo, okay? And they're going to do everything they can to do that. So if they can find one loophole in the way you word your papers that can lead them to a place where they feel comfortable, then they're going to feel comfortable and keep you.
Well, so, they held me in prison. I went to prison for 3 years, and I was classified as a sovereign citizen.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, what does that mean, really, when you ask that? What is a sovereign citizen? What is that to them, you know? But anyway, I couldn't comment anymore unless I were to look at your papers and maybe point out some points there where they kind of hung their hat.
Okay. Are you done with your imprisonment, your probation, and what are
I'm still on probation. I filed a habeas with the Supreme Court back last year in July, and they threw it back at me, and, you know, I sent it to everybody else. They have me paying, they're extorting money from me for restitution for my ex's taxes. They attached me to his case because he got the refund. I didn't get a refund. And so
did he go to prison?
He went to prison too, but he blamed it all on me, and he's the one that spent all the money.
Now, what did you say they charged you? What did you say they charged you with? It was it evasion?
287.
Yeah. What does that say?
Conspiracy.
Oh.
To
defraud
the
United States.
Yeah.
Yeah, conspiracy fraud. And how much money did they claim that you defrauded the government out of?
Well, they added mine to his, and I'm not sure how much that was. He got a refund for $226,000. We filed separate.
Well, what did you? Oh, so he got a refund, and that's what they went after him for, getting that refund.
Yes.
And who taught you how to do? Who taught you how to do that? Did you go to a seminar?
Yeah,
what?
Winston Strout.
What's his name? Go ahead. Oh, I can't hear you now. Just a minute. What was his name again?
I'm not hearing her either. She's not talking or anything.
I got it now.
Winston
go ahead. What was
Strout?
His name?
Winston
Spell it.
Strout.
Is that an individual you met online that's teaching this stuff?
Yeah, well, Winston Strout, Solutions in Commerce. And I'm surprised you haven't heard of him. When I was going through it, yes, I bought seminars from him. I had private consultation with him. Eventually, when I got out of prison, I seen that he was indicted. But
yeah, were you doing business under a corporation?
I'm not sure.
Okay, but the point is you see, look it. There are certain taxes that are lawful, and the IRS plays a lot with the corporations. But even there, the way it's written, it just doesn't work right. They have to rewrite that to do the right thing. There's no problem where, you know, for the Treasury or the IRS, if you want to, they really need to change that, the IRS whole system. But there's no problem with them applying taxes to corporations for business that they're doing and things of that nature. But there is a problem when you tax an individual sweat, okay? So when your labor is your sweat, and now that's a slave tax when they come and burden you with the tax. So when you mentioned that the return was $250,000, it made me realize all of a sudden this is probably some business things going on, and so there's some lawfulness there, and I don't know. You see, now they're going after the offices behind behind the corporation, maybe, or something of that nature. But nevertheless, Title 18, the jurisdiction, is admiralty and maritime, not the law of the land, and that's clear. All you do is go open Title 18 and run the word jurisdiction through there, and you'll find it pretty quickly, And that's the jurisdiction for 18. So they can't really, you know, when a court opens up under that title, well, that's a jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with people, you know. And
yes,
now a corporation, that's a whole another game. But nevertheless, even that, again, there's a problem with this whole system because part of it should be lawful, okay? But they didn't do anything lawful on that one.
I've done the research now. There were 77 appeals for this 1099 OID scheme, all being taught by Winston Strout and his people. And
there's two other things that also, you know, one is a proof of claim. It is very doubtful that a proof of claim was ever filed on you. And if it was, it's probably not notarized, so there's no sworn, it's not a sworn affidavit form. They can't proceed without that. That everything starts with an affidavit, and that's where things start. Someone has to write an affidavit making that claim, of you owing them so much money, okay? The other thing is they have to have fiduciary authority to go into your bank accounts and other places and so on. Now, they will tell you what authority they operate under, and I know as far as people go, you know, when you read through that stuff and you go down that rabbit hole of the meaning of things, you discover it has nothing to do with you as one of the people. Now, again, it becomes a little wishy-washy with corporations, but nevertheless, the whole system there is really just all screwed up. So I don't, they need to rewrite it is what they need to do and make it lawful. That's what they need to do.
Yes, they do. Well, the IRS never satisfied their jurisdictional prerequisite. They had primary jurisdiction, and they never satisfied it. They attached me to the case. I had no notice. There was no notice. They used ex post facto law because Congress didn't pass anything about the 1099 OIDs, the informational filings, until it was 2015. And guess what? I got a refund while I was in prison for why I was sitting in prison.
No kidding. Well, that's another point you could make, but I would start off with jurisdiction, see where that goes. But again, let me tell you, something is wrong there. If the judge has a private thing, there's nobody watching, nobody knows what's going on, and they play with the records. Let me tell you, if there's nothing going on that no one is seeing anything, that's why you want to bring witnesses to court. You want to get as many witnesses as you can to do affidavits on what took place, good or for bad, you know, whatever took place in that courtroom. You want affidavits on it. And at the end of the day, you know, I want a copy of the recording or, you know, not just the recording, but, you should be able to get a copy of the recording too, you know. Well,
right.
We get it. I'll sit and wait. The thing is that, you know, you don't know what's really on the record, number one, and your paperwork, or did you file papers and write things, or did you make arguments? Did you have a lawyer or what?
I did, and they put me in to a competency examination before in January.
Well, right there tells you something. When they have to go check your competency, and because you're making certain points that you believe and they think is crazy, they want to see that you're not competent, and they want to stick a lawyer on you if you don't have a lawyer and all that other stuff. But right there tells you a problem because, look, I'm talking to you. You're clearly not crazy. You do have some misunderstandings of some things, but that doesn't mean you're crazy. You're not competent. Okay, now their competency thing, you know, usually goes psychological, but they could be trying to also make the point you're not competent to represent yourself or, you know, make the argument in that court for them, which I doubt is their point, because they probably sent you to a psychiatrist,
You
want right?
to know why they sent me in for a competency exam? I went into court, I put myself under oath, and I told them I was a woman created by God. And
mm-hmm.
the judge said, what the hell does God have to do with the court of law?
Well, right there tells you some more.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty ignorant judge. This is a federal judge you're talking about, huh?
This is a federal judge, yeah.
Well, you know, look, we do have some extremists on the bench there. There's no doubt about that. A lot of commies and Marxists. So, they think some crazy stuff. So they don't believe in God to begin with. So no God in my court is their position, probably. But... Well, look, this is why you have to stay focused. You have to learn the proper, you know, processes and procedures. You have to learn the language to some degree. You know, I mean, the going in there making law in the land type things and all that stuff, it's not going to help you. It only gives them it's really just fuel for the fire for them as far as
that's
concerned.
Well, my most recent petition, it was a 60D3 motion for fraud on the court, and it was pretty kick-ass, and it was using their laws, pointing out their mistakes, and I sent it to the chief.
Let me let me ask you one other question. Well, let me make one other point, and you tell me whether this happened or not, okay? When you challenged a jurisdiction, did you get up to make a position on that, or did you write a paper and file it? What did you do?
I filed it.
You had a paper, and you filed that paper?
Right.
And that paper maybe was 2, 3, 5, 10 pages long and made that position clear concerning what jurisdiction is and that they have to prove jurisdiction, and it has to be written on the papers, on the court. It has to be written on the papers what the jurisdiction is.
That was all in
and,
my brief.
And that jurisdiction must be decided. Now, since it has to be decided, did the U.S. attorney, prosecutor, did they write a paper and put it into the court? Okay.
No.
Well, how can a judge, and there was no decision made, how can a judge make a decision on a one-sided argument?
Hold it.
Listen, if the judge made a decision on a one-sided position, then your position should hold, period.
Yeah.
In other words, you don't have jurisdiction. Because he proves his bias right there by not listening to both sides and ruling the case accordingly with what's before him. Okay? He didn't do any of those things.
No, he didn't.
Well, you see, you can take this through the... There's a whole bunch of stuff you could do with this. Go back, challenge the jurisdiction, and make the point that it needs to be decided and press the issue towards decision. That judge needs to recuse himself. He proved his biasness by making a decision without hearing first. That's fraud, according to the United States Supreme Court. That's fraud.
Yes, he made the decision without the other parties. They didn't answer. And this has been twice now. I went to the Chief Justice.
Well, there again, here's another thing. If you knew that they didn't make it, did you file an affidavit of default on the issue?
I have not done that. I've just got the order from the court denying my petition, and he's violating stare decisis. He's very prejudiced and biased towards me.
Well, look at you know. There's you know. You at least you're out of jail. I mean, you're in jail. And were in jail. At least you're out of jail. At some point we expect to win. Okay, I do believe we have a very high chance of winning. You know, 5 years ago we wouldn't have a prayer, and we weren't ready to do this kind of filing we're about to do now. But now everything has changed. The environment of Washington, D.C. has changed. It's reverberating right through the entire judicial system that there's a new, sheriff in town, so to speak, and that the status quo positions that they felt so comfortable before making may not be so much comfortable anymore. Okay, so, once we get to the other side of things, when we the people can finally take back control of our courts, that's when you'll be able to go and get some success. Now, meanwhile, if you want to try to do something before that, you need to start getting educated. I tell you to go and take our course, maybe take a jurisdictionary course. I mean, that costs $349 to take that course.
Now, I appreciate that. I've taken the jurisdictionary course. I've taken constitution class after constitution class.
Okay, but look at the jurisdictionary course is taught by a lawyer who follows the rules.
Yeah.
And he talks about federal courts to a little bit. But, he's really that particular guy. He's a good guy, and he likes the common law, but he really doesn't understand the common law. And he confuses the court systems between equity and law like most lawyers do. And that's a problem. So, I mean, but the basics, you see, what he's teaching, though, with jurisdictionary, he's teaching you the procedures and the processes of the court. He's teaching you forms, the papers, what's required to open up a court.
The attorneys do. I've been working with Carl G. Dranzi for the past 2 years.
Okay, but my point is this. using that part of the structure for the jurisdictionary course, if you've already taken that, you got the structure. Now you need to understand the law, the Constitution, how it all works together. You need to go into history. You need to understand common law, and you need to appreciate, you know, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and how that all applies. And a lot of United States Supreme Court rulings, which rules those people, okay? You know, I remember having an argument with a judge one time. This is on a state level. And I brought up some constitutional issues, and he says, well, we're not having that in here. And I says, well, you're disagreeing, and you're going up against the United States Supreme Court. And he said, no, I'm not doing that. Well, what are you doing then? You know, either you're going to obey the law or you're not. At some point, I saw contempt coming in, so I backed off. But this is what these judges, they'll go to. They'll go to those extremes. Again, I have learned not to make an argument in the court of anything new. Okay. If I object or anything, you know, I'll respond to that objection on paper when I'm outside the court.
Right.
Is your name May?
No, it's Trisha.
Christo, I was just looking. I found this.
Patricia.
Oh, Patricia. Thank you. But you're from Minnesota, right?
Yes.
Well, I was looking on the computer here, and it talks about a woman from Anoka, Minnesota, that was involved with this fellow named Strout. And this was a woman named May, M-A-Y, from Minneapolis. Are you from Minneapolis?
I'm from Minneapolis, yeah.
Yeah, they had a business named D&T and Sun Excavating in Coon Rapids.
Sam May, yeah, I know her.
Yeah, yeah. And now this had to do, this fellow was a religious leader, wasn't he?
No, he was not. I'm surprised you haven't heard of him. He was all over YouTube.
Yeah, well, I don't go looking for things like that. But you were convicted you had a jury trial, no doubt, right?
I had. It was a very, if that's what you want to call it.
Well, let's put it this way. A jury was impaneled, wasn't it? A jury was impaneled?
Yeah, it was about Tony Show.
Yeah. And were you tried in Arizona?
No, in Minneapolis.
Oh, okay. And how long was the trial? How many weeks?
A week and a half.
Uh-huh. And then after jury trial, so you never were in tax court, you were in federal district court.
Right.
I see, right? Right, I get
right.
it. And you had a lawyer, was it the lawyer you hired?
No, court appointed. I actually was I was defending myself at first until they put me into competency, they shipped me off to Carswell, Texas.
Well, Strout, was he connected to, his name is Strout, Winston Strout, was he connected to the Kingdom of Heaven?
I do not believe so.
Well, you know, the internet's connects him with that, and also says that he's a leader of a sovereign citizen movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see. And he went to jail. He was 70 years old, and he went to jail for 10 years.
No, he was sentenced to 10 years, and he took off. He's on the lam.
Oh, how long? That's not funny. How long has he been on the lam?
The appeals court told him to turn himself in. I really do believe. And I can send you my brief that I just did. I did the research. And I believe that he was an infiltrate. He was part of the whole weaponizing of the IRS against the Patriots.
Oh, in other words, he was an asset for the IRS.
Yes.
I get it. No, that happens a lot. I see what you're saying. And then they make it look like he goes on the lam and he never goes to prison. Yeah, I get it. I get it. That's not unusual.
He targeted homeowners in foreclosure.
Yeah. And so that's why you say that it was an entrapment.
Yes.
No, I get it.
I was in prison with four other women who were there for the same reason, got into it because they were in foreclosure.
Okay. Where were you in prison?
Where was I in prison?
Yes.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
See, you got to be really, really careful with all these sovereign groups and all these things they're teaching out there on the Internet, because they're bringing up things that I don't want to say what they're saying is not true, okay, because they do have a, you know, and I've looked at this stuff myself, okay, and it is true.
Yeah.
But it's the position you take on this thing. What it is it's fraud. That's what it is, okay? And that's what you call it. You got to call it for what it is. But when you do all of this, you know, all of these words and papers saying that you're a sovereign citizen, you're a man or a woman of God, you're of the flesh and blood, and you know, and you go through all these things, and then you start to just a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, I've read, you know, I've never went to get rid of my license and my social.
I think you cut out.
How much more time?
It's really going on.
Hello.
How much more time do you have on probation?
I have till May next year, and actually they're upping the oppression.
Try to do it again. It's all in paper, because you know we're not going to be able to go into the courts and articulate ourselves as well. We're going to be interrupted. The other side's going to beat us up. They're going to say things that we may not be prepared to answer and respond to. So the best thing to do is always to write a paper. You know, whatever goes on in the court that day, you go back and you write a paper. Yeah, I object to that. I object. Well, why do you object to it? Well, I'm going to write. I got to go home and study this And I'm going to write a paper, and I'll put it into the court. And you do that, and you do it right away, and see what the other side does. And let them make their arguments, and if they come back with something and they bring up these certain issues, at least you're at home, and you got time to research and look into these things to see what their position is, and you form an argument against it. I've always been confident that I could beat any of the arguments they could bring up. May not be able to beat it right there on the spot, but I know if I research it, because it's, you know, you can tell truth. Truth is easy. Things that are self-evident are easy to see. And
yeah.
When you see this problem, you know there's a problem. I'm going to win this, because you can always win it as long as you do your research. And go back and use their things against them. Use their boss. Their boss is the United States Supreme Court. That's their boss.
Yeah.
The American jurisprudence. You see, use that against them. And in federal courts, usually that goes over. You know, again, you probably, the judge felt very comfortable to, you know, bamboozle you. But that tells me that he had plenty of places to hang his hat. He wasn't worried about nothing. You know, got to make that judge worry.
Now, you got to realize here, this judge, and I've done my research, is now you're familiar with Paul Mitchell, right? He did the research on the credentials for judges.
No, I don't know that. I might. It sounds familiar. What was it for judges?
He did research
for judges?
Requests on all the judges throughout the country for their credentials. And this judge is touting a counterfeit appointment affidavit.
That's not unusual.
No, it's not.
Try to get their oath of office. They won't produce them. And the government won't produce them.
Yeah, well, Paul Mitchell has it up on his website. And it's a counterfeit.
We got to move on to the next caller, because it's getting late. We still have callers in the queue. But again, you know, a lot of this that you're going, you got a complicated situation. And again, you know, you have to look at a lot of different things and what's really going on. You got to look back to see the paperwork you wrote. And you got to stay on point. You know, and a lot of things that I see with people in courts, and I used to do this myself, I made this mistake, it gets too complicated because you write too many issues and you don't break things down and keep it simple and clean and focused. Focus on the points that you're going to win on. Focus on the points that's going to control the conversation of the court, okay? You got to keep them on the defense all the time, and if they're not, then you're losing. That's key.
Okay. Aren't they on the defense if they can't answer it?
Well, yeah, as long as you, but the thing is you have to follow through, and you have to do,
okay.
You have to do an affidavit of default on, if they, look at, you write a paper, they write a paper, and they respond to your paper, and they may be six issues they don't, you know, 6 points that they don't debate against or argue against. Well, they defaulted those 3, 4, 5, 6 issues they didn't respond to. And you got to,
so
you got to move that court along, you see.
I should put in an affidavit of default on the U.S. attorney, and then at the same time, I should appeal the decision of this judge.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I should put in an affidavit of default on the U.S. attorney because they didn't answer.
Well, look at how long the case sounds old to begin with. You were in jail for how long?
3 years. No, this
okay.
is just... This was the judge's order is dated June 10th.
This year?
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, again, you know, you should have moved this before he made his order. How long? How long did you wait, or he wait, before the judge came in and made a decision?
It was under 20 days.
Was under 20 days?
Yes, it was.
That's surprising, you know. That's surprising. But, yeah, that he shouldn't have done because, again, you know, you have the opportunity. Well, again, he's just taken advantage of this whole thing because he knows you don't really know what you're doing in order to control that court. He knows you can't control the court, and he's got total control. And so there you got a problem there, okay? You know, when you go into a court, you have to make the judge worry and wonder about you. And you got to always be bringing those points and following up on everything and pressing the issue here and making sure you write the default for this. You know, you got 20 points and they don't answer one. They defaulted that 1 point that becomes a wedge to use in your case, obviously, because you put it down as an important point, you know. And those are the things you do. You never let anything fall away. You know, 30 days, pop. You know, you do it, you know, the day they receive it doesn't count. And the last day, you know, the day after, and you come in with your default, the affidavit of default. Anyway, we've got to move on. I want to talk some more. You can get back to you, okay?
All right.
All right, thanks. Tina from Texas, you got the mic. Tina from Texas. We got you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I have three things going on right now. I have one, I had an unlawful detainer, and I did a constitutional challenge. So when I went to, you know, on day 60, I went to the judge to see if they had my hearing scheduled, to make sure my hearing was scheduled for me to have my hearing. So when I got there, the judge told the clerk to tell me that my case was closed and that she didn't say recused, she used a P word, let me put it that way. And so I said, okay, well, put it in writing. So the clerk went back, told the judge, came back, and next thing I know I had several officers surrounding me.
Well, yeah, they don't like you questioning that. You know, again, look at, I tell you, especially when you know that the environment is bad, and, you know, here's the rule of thumb. You know, if they fear you, then you're because of what you're saying, then, okay, you know, they got a little bit of a problem. They'll be a little more careful with you. But if you fear them and they don't fear you, you know, they're going to walk all over you. So I'd be careful. You have to try to figure out when's the time to not say anything and to walk away and then do your paperwork, okay? Do your paperwork. That's what they're not going to be able to escape that once you file it. But what kind of case was it? You opened a case and was trying to sue?
No, I didn't. It was a writ of possession that she told me that I had to. I kept telling her that she needed to speak to my attorney. In fact, when I was there. And
who's
she said, this is the judge.
Okay.
The judge kept telling me, well, if you don't go on the record, because I told her, no, you need to speak to my attorney in fact. And she said, well, if you don't go on the record then you're going to have a 99% chance that I'm going to give the attorney writ of possession. And I said again, I'm sorry.
Possession of what?
My property.
Okay.
Of my house.
What's this, a foreclosure?
It's a foreclosure, yeah.
Tax foreclosure or mortgage?
Mortgage.
Okay, well, we got paperwork on that, and you can go through that process of challenging, you know. Well, first of all, what we do is what's called an amicus curiae, okay, and what we go in and inform the court on behalf, you know, on your behalf, inform the court of the fraud that's taken place by the process that's being used by these mortgage companies, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, you know, you see what happens, whether they're going to take that serious after 30 days, and then after that, if you don't get anywhere with it, you're moving into federal court for cause,
okay?
Which we can work with you on our case that we're filing and bring that in on mortgage cases. We'll work with that. So you should go up to our website and click on due process, follow the instructions on that page, and see what you want to do. You can do a joinder, or you can go and all of the forms are there to do it yourself. If you feel confident to do it yourself, you can do it yourself. But people constantly, they get frustrated in the court and they get beat up and because they don't know how to move the court. They don't know when to do things, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if someone defaults on something, you got to get right on top of that. And you got to push that issue and change the whole thing around as far as this issue is concerned. They've acquiesced to this. They've defaulted. They agree. Hey, let's move
okay.
on. You see, you start to build your winnings in there. And the other thing, of course, is, you know, where do you go from here? If you get a judge that says, I got jurisdiction, slaps his hammer. Well, you got to recuse yourself now. And, you know, you might want to tell him in the court, but you got to be careful depending on the judge and depending on what you think he thinks of you. Whether he
mm-hmm.
or she feels that, you know, maybe you're, you know, they don't know who you really are and what you're doing because you know what you're doing, maybe. So, you know, so there's some psychology there. But, again, best is always to do it in writing and sending it in, all right?
Okay.
You can write a paper saying, Your Honor, you made a decision. This took place. Put the facts on the paper, on and for
okay.
the record. Put it on the record. And make it a verified paper. At the end, you're
okay.
going to do an affidavit. You're going to make it an affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
You get you notarized, and
right.
you let the judge know. First off, you know this was this happened and this happened, and you made a decision immediately, and you didn't hear the other side, and therefore you've proven biased, and you need to recuse yourself, and some other judge needs to come in here, and make the decision a lawful decision here,
and she did recuse herself. She did.
So then the next judge came in.
No one came in after that. This is
oh,
what she
well,
told me.
Then,
she
you know, again,
wasn't putting anything in writing. She has recused herself. Mm-hmm.
But you see, you've allowed that all this to happen. That's the point. And I'm not getting on you for that. People need to understand this. If you don't know how the system works, you got a problem. Okay, you're not
mm-hmm.
going to win in the courts because they know how it works, and they can corner you into things and feel very comfortable about it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
you know, when they see that you're moving things along and you're taking control of the conversation and you got everyone on the defense, you know, that's when you know you're winning. But right now, you're the one that's on the defense. It's clear you're losing, and as long as you're on the defense, you're going to continue to lose. At the end, it's going to be a loss case. And so again, you know, you need to do some homework here to understand how this works. And push it through the process. You got a lot of opportunities here. You know, you move for the judge to come in to make the proper decision. You let him know what the proper decision is, okay?
Okay.
And then if that doesn't work and they make the improper position, they got to write up the reasoning behind it, the logic behind their decision-making. And sometimes it's a bunch of BS. You know, they just write a lot of things about a lot of things, and, you know, they seem to papers forget about it. But... You know, then the next thing is, well, I want a reconsideration on the decision by a panel of judges, okay?
Okay.
So you move it up that line. And then you can always go into the appellate court, you know, appeal it. You know, so that's another, it's a third process you can go into.
Okay.
You know, so you got to move it along.
Okay. Well, I have one more. I did a constitutional challenge for my son. He's in prison, been in there 4 years. His first time having a hearing was this past April. And what happened was I was his attorney, in fact, when I got there. And the judge suppressed all the evidence, threw everything out. So the prosecutor started screaming, "I'm going to appeal it, I'm going to appeal it." So he appealed it. So what's my next step after that?
So they appealed it?
The prosecuting attorney did, because the judge threw everything out. He suppressed
evidence. Okay, so the judge threw it out, and the prosecuting attorney is appealing it.
Right.
And now, and this is a case. What kind of case is this one? Is this the mortgage case?
No, this is not mortgage. This is for my son. My son is in federal prison.
Before. Okay, I'm sorry.
He had a gun charge.
Okay. What did he do? He just had possession of a gun?
Possession of a gun, and they made it a conspiracy because it had to do with drugs as well.
Threw
everything out. Drugs. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not getting
possession,
that word.
Possession.
Okay. Possession of a gun.
Of drugs and a gun.
Drugs. Okay.
Right.
All right. And, well, look it. You know me, I would go right away and challenge jurisdiction. That's where I'd start off.
Okay.
Shut the whole thing down with jurisdiction challenge. And again, when the judge makes the decision, well, again, he threw it all out, so it's out.
Yeah, he threw it out. It was the prosecutor that started screaming in the courtroom.
Okay, but now your son was released?
They didn't release him either. No, they said they wanted to have...
The judge shut it down, threw it out, and didn't release your son.
Didn't release him, absolutely, yes.
More problems. Just because the prosecutor is deciding he's going to appeal it, they're keeping him in jail.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. Look, challenge the jurisdiction.
Okay.
That's what I would do. They don't have it.
Okay.
You better do your homework on it, and you got to write the papers properly. If you don't write the papers and follow the procedures right, you know, you got to understand what's going on here. If the judge makes a decision without first having a hearing, okay, where the prosecutor comes up to show that they do have jurisdiction, and you make the point that you do have jurisdiction, if that other side doesn't respond, then they defaulted, and that's it. You write an affidavit of default. But the thing is that, you know, you got to keep moving this thing along, and you got to take control of it. The judge, first of all, if he does it properly, then, and has a hearing, then at least he's considering it. He still may make the wrong
decision. He did go back in, and he said that he put an order in saying that all the evidence is inadmissible after the prosecuting attorney had
go back and ask him why he hasn't released it.
Okay.
That's what you should go do. Say, well, you know, you threw this out. You said the evidence is no good. It can't be used. And my son's still sitting in jail.
Okay.
What's going on? Ask him.
Okay.
Be nice. Just go up there as a regular person and talk to the man.
Okay.
See,
thank
you
so
much. It sounds like he's on your side to some degree, so you got to be careful. You know,
I went in as his attorney in fact, and I told him that okay, we have a constitutional challenge, and that he couldn't give a judgment on it, because only person that could do that is the attorney general, and he's been sitting in their jail as a guest for almost 4 years. And never had due process.
Right. So he hasn't. Was he indicted?
No, there was no indictment. And I said, you have to charge him with something.
Is this a federal case?
It's a federal. Yes, it is. In Texas. I'm in Texas. Yes.
Wow. Well, you need to go talk to this judge. Look, you need to sit down and think about all these things. And when you go in and talk to them, you know, you have to be very careful and be nice and so on and so forth and make certain points. Look, judge, There's no indictment here. My son's in jail 4 years. He hasn't had due process. And finally, you did the right thing, I believe. You threw the case out, and you said the evidence was can't be used. And why is he still sitting in jail? That's the question.
And that's
but
what I'm saying.
Also... How about a jury? Okay. Was there a trial jury involved?
No trial. No, it was a hearing. It was just a hearing. And they had all, it was like 20 witnesses there. And so I said, everybody, Your Honor,
okay, let's see the judge.
Everybody has to swear in. So only one person end up swearing in, no one else.
Go see the judge, talk to him, see where you get with that. Next step is habeas corpus.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
and challenge of jurisdiction. But you don't want to do those two things until you understand where the judge is at, because he may be working with you. And,
okay.
And he may say, look, you're going to have some patience here because there's some things going on that, you know, beyond my control at this point, and, you know, we can probably square it out in 30 days or something. You know, figure out what, I don't know what's in the guy's mind, but apparently he seems to be working on your side.
Okay.
So. But it's very troubling, the power and the authority of these U.S. attorneys, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, we can move on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Tina. Okay, Gerard, 210 area code, I guess.
Hey, hello?
Yep.
Oh, hey, this is Jay from San Antonio.
Yep.
Okay, I believe I could help a little bit with some of these people are going through. I'm actually going through something myself. They just recently pulled me over, and the officer that had pulled me over, he didn't have a reason to pull me over. I had asked him because he had asked me for my driver's license. I asked him why he had pulled me over. I had a green light, and pretty much it went all south. I ended up bonding out, and because it's a municipal court, it's a city court. I know there's never a stenographer in there. So
what city?
It's San Antonio.
Okay.
But I'm out of Houston. I'm from Houston, and I've dealt with.
So this is some kind of traffic infraction, and it went bad because you gave the cop a hard time or something.
Because he couldn't tell me initially what he pulled me over
for. He's following what he was told to do. He doesn't know the law. He doesn't care about the law. He's not a thinker. He's not going to exercise his mind in law and construction of law. So he knows nothing. He's just applying the law as he's told to do it, and he thinks it's the law. So the last thing, I'm sure, hopefully this is a lesson for you too, and I know people are teaching people to argue with the cops. I would never do that. Never, ever, ever argue with a cop. Yes, sir, no, sir. They want to see my driver's license. As far as I'm concerned, if it's ever brought up in court, which it won't, my presumption is given it as ID, not as a reason to drive. But go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, look. See, the thing was, I would have had no problem complying. I had forgot my driver's license at the house, so there was no, you know, I had to stick by my guns. And so,
yeah, but if you've got a driver's license and you didn't have it on your body, he can get on the radio and find out that you got a driver's license. Was the car yours?
Definitely.
It was your car?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so they would know.
Hold it.
Listen, they would know A, that the car's registered. B, they would know that it's insured. C, he sees you driving it. Okay, you can find all that stuff out. He's got your name. He can see that you're the owner, or at least on the registration, your name is there. It's probably you. They can even give him a little description. They go right in. They got all the records. Yeah, you got a driver's license, and they could see it. And they can get, give me some info on the guy. And they say, well, you know, he's so tall, and you know, black hair and this, that, or the other thing, you know, 28, 30, whatever. Okay, he can look at you and say, well, that's probably you. And if you would have just went along with him, he probably would have let you go. I don't like being stopped, but it's a war we're not going to win at this point. And I'm not going to fight it to the point of going to jail. I got too many other things to be doing. But I will challenge it in court. I'll challenge the jurisdiction if I have the time. Sometimes I pay the ticket, you know, $50 or something, and, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, you got to live with some of these problems, you know, for right now.
Yeah, definitely. So, look, this was the second time, though, in a row. I failed to mention this was the second day. The first day they pulled me over, the cop just pulled me out the car. I told him, I said, yo, what are you doing? You can't just do that. He said, I got all probable cause. And he reached in my pocket and pulled out a pack of cigarettes and was like, what's this? I said, dude, you can't, you don't have consent to search my person or my vehicle. What are you doing? He told me to roll down the back window to speak with a passenger, and I just started rolling up the windows, and he opened my door. So I exploited his fault. They let me go the first day. The second day, this is when this happened, I left the house for approximately 10 minutes, and there they go. They got behind me. I was at a light. It hit green, and on the green light, that's when the officer pulled me over. And I had told him, I was like, officer, I had green. What seems to be the problem? And he, let me see your driver's license and insurance. I was like, I'm sorry, sir. Like, I need to know, you know, what it is that I, like, you know, what crime do you suspect me of committing? What infraction did I commit? You know,
you should have asked that question as you're giving him the papers. And I know that's not what you're being taught. I know that. And I was taught the same thing that you were taught, you know, not that I exercised a lot of that stuff, but I was learning it and trying to figure things out. But I'm telling you, it's the wrong way to go. Look at
no, you're right, you're right.
You want to make a fight, go fight with the judge. Go fight with the prosecutor. Don't fight with the cop ever. It just doesn't make sense. You know, it's going to just get you into more problems. Yes, sir. No, sir. Here's my papers that you're asking me for. By the way, why did you stop me? I didn't think I did anything here. You know, that's how I deal with it, you know.
Okay, so let me skip all that.
We'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you one thing.
I'm actually, because you're right, I'm fighting the court now. I'm fighting them with corresponding. They sent me an appearance notice in the mail. Okay, so I initially got arrested for possession of marijuana and resisting arrest, okay? So I got resisting arrest and possession. They beat me up pretty bad, whatever. I got bonded out. So I get an appearance notice from city with three different charges. Okay, so it's a failure to present driver's license, failure to obey cross guard, which there wasn't no school around there, no cross guard. No, it wasn't a school time.
But you do see that you escalated the problem by trying to fight with the cops. Take the ticket, go home, and deal with it on court day. And what I do is I always send the paper. I always send the paper.
Or even my driver's license. So, yeah, you're right. I wasn't ready, but, and yeah, I went about it the wrong way. I could, if I was ready and had all my paperwork and had my driver's license, it would have probably went by a lot smoother, because I usually don't give cops. I'm not the type to buck the system. If I can just, you know, get by with just, you know, both of us, you know, go about our day, then I'm okay. You know, I didn't have nothing to hide, and I wasn't doing anything wrong. I just didn't have my proper documentation to give to him that he was asking for, so I kind of had to just, like, you know, ask him, well, officer, what did you pull me over for? You know, I didn't want to let him know I didn't have my driver's license like I was supposed to.
Well, anyway, look, at the point, though, is this, is you got to be careful with this. You got to make the arguments in the right place, and you got to do it in the right way. Look, I take the ticket if they give me a ticket. Half the time they don't give me a ticket. And, well, a couple of things that I do, but nevertheless, if I do get a ticket, okay, I always send in a paper and deny them jurisdiction and see where that goes, you know. Last time I did that, I even defaulted them because the prosecutor never responded. And then they tried to work a deal out. They said, look, we'll give you a fine of $50. Well, I thought at that point it's just not worth the battle at this point in time. So I paid a $50. Look, they robbed me of $50. I'll move on. Hopefully next year or the year after, we're not going to have to deal with these problems because we're going to fix the problems. And that's what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, is trying to fix these problems, to get justice back in the courts, get them back under the law, and obey the law and stop harassing the people. Okay? But you got to make your decisions on, you know, spend your time fighting here with us instead of spending your time fighting a ticket, because it's just, you know, the weight is different, you know?
I think I'm on to something, though, because I think, look. Can I tell you what I'm going through right now on the good stuff?
If you can make it quick, because we just hit midnight, so make it quick.
Real quick, okay. So they sent me an appearance notice. I sent them a notice of an appearance. Okay, so on there, I'm stating my name. Okay, there's a way to put the speaker name into the record without it being the corporational entity. And,
forget about all that. Forget about that. Go in there and fight the battle on the law, win on the law. You go in there under what's called special appearance. I'm here by special appearance to test the jurisdiction of this court. I've already wrote a paper, Your Honor. Did you read my paper? Well, I haven't had time yet. Well, okay, well, my paper's on the court. I'm challenging jurisdiction. You don't have it. If they try to take jurisdiction by saying, well, look, I'm looking at this case, I got jurisdiction. Well, look, jurisdiction for once challenged must be decided. How did you decide on having jurisdiction if you didn't get the argument from the other side? The prosecutor hasn't said anything here. Prosecutor hasn't responded to my paper. You know, that's where you go. I mean, you know, stick on the law, make the argument on the law. And if it's only a $50 or $100 ticket, you know, at some point give up. It's not worth it. Okay, I do know it's wrong, but I don't want to be sitting in jail. Do you want to be sitting in jail?
No, sir. But yeah. Okay, look, if my paperwork is appearing in propria persona, and I am trying to get to that point to challenge jurisdiction. That's where I have done it before too in court, and I've had a lawyer tell me that they had all jurisdiction and that they operated under statutory. So I know that they tried to say that they have the jurisdiction they're operating under is Admiralty Maritime, but they're not going to admit that.
They're not even operating under that. Its jurisdiction's unknown. First of all, they're Nisi Prius courts, okay? And if they understand, a lot of judges are taught that they're Nisi Prius courts now. They teach them in judge school. They go for a whole week, I think. Isn't that something? Anyway, and they're not even lawyers either, so they have to depend on the law to be understood by the prosecutor. So really the judge is the prosecutor and not the judge, you know. And that's a strange thing, but that's exactly how it works, all these elected judges on the towns and villages. But in any event, okay,
I want to fight that cause. I don't want to fight the facts of the case or none of that. I want to fight the fact that they're
Yeah, but you have to know how to do it. No, you don't fight. If you want to win or do you want to fight?
I want to win.
Okay, then don't fight. Move the court. Make your points. Put it on record. Write your papers. Make your, and then push it along, you know? Don't allow them, if they're not going to go and allow this to go to a court of record in order to make a decision on whether they have jurisdiction, because they don't even have the power or the authority to decide whether they got jurisdiction. Besides that, they already believe they got jurisdiction. They're biased.
Right. I didn't show up in court more than twice.
You got to move it into a different court. I send my papers, they get before me, I'll show up at the court once, and that's it. If I'm going to challenge that case and take it to the higher courts, I'm not going back anymore. Okay,
habeas corpus.
Huh? How do you think you'd file a habeas corpus? Where would you file it?
Uh, probably the district clerk. Public record? I don't know.
Look at, if you're going to challenge jurisdiction, I mean, if you're going to put up a habeas corpus, okay, you got to move it into a court of record. I go to the federal courts on that because it is a constitutional issue, and it's written up in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, concerning habeas corpus. So right there, they have jurisdiction under anything under that Constitution. So I'd move it right into the federal district court, and that's where I'd make my argument or bring up the habeas corpus. Can't put it into that court, that's for sure.
Okay,
they haven't got
okay.
authority to hear it anyway.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
My point is this. You need to learn the process and procedures. Forget all that stuff you learn on the Internet. Get some real – we've got a great course right here, okay? If you want to spend the money for jurisdictionary, but it doesn't seem like you really need that at this point because we can teach you all that in our course, but it is a good course because he's got a lot of things he could teach you. But you have to understand there are certain things that guy is teaching that you got to do it differently. He doesn't really see and understand common law, and that's his problem. But, you know, we have a government by consent course, and we teach all this stuff in there. Matter of fact, you can download, we have an 84 or 86-page book up there on the anatomy of a court case. Lays out the paperwork, how to open a court, how to deal with the paperwork, how to respond to, you know, if you're being sued or prosecuted for something, you know, you need to be able to know the procedures. And you got to be ready for them to try to make you look at. You go in a challenge jurisdiction, if you don't understand when the guy decides that he has jurisdiction, you're going to lose if you don't understand what to do after that.
Okay, look, do you know about the bar? Do you know about crossing the bar in the court?
Yeah, I passed the bar. It's meaningless. I wouldn't even bother. Look, I did that once. I went into a federal court. I had a case, which I actually won anyway. But nevertheless, I didn't cross the bar. I looked back, and I said, that was the dumbest thing I ever done, because really that was showing ignorance on my part to the process.
Wait, so
but
you didn't cross the bar? You didn't cross the bar, but you won the case.
But that for different reasons, not because I didn't cross the bar, because I did lay down positive positions that they could not argue. It was a federal – listen to me. Hold on. It was a federal case. The judge understood certain things, and he certainly understood that I knew what I was talking about, and he saw
the problem. You crossed the bar.
No, it wasn't because of that. Next time I cross, I never did that again. I don't care about the bar. It's meaningless to me. That's
okay,
all fraud.
Okay.
That's their sandbox. And you're putting more time and effort and understanding into that exercise of something that's irrelevant to the court, irrelevant to being able to win, okay, because none of those people ever win. I hear them all the time on the Internet telling me how the wins they get, but they never win. Nobody following them never wins, and a lot of them go to jail.
Look, I have a friend that's actually won, and his father's won this way. And I'm telling you, he's asking the witness to take the stand, the state of Texas to take the stand. And the state of Texas can't present themselves because there's, you know, you got the right in court to face your accuser. There is no victim.
Let me ask you a question. Were you in the court when that took place with that argument?
No, but I have his paperwork. I have his paperwork.
Okay. Well, he may have won, but remember this. He may not have won. He may not have won because of that argument. When I won in my case, there were three positions, and I wondered which one it was that actually won my case, okay? And now I know which ones won the case, and that was the fact they didn't have an affidavit to open the case. The point is they didn't have proof of claim. They didn't have fiduciary authority to go and search the things that they searched without any warrants or anything. So, and they claimed this under a process called INREM, INREM, which is a process that takes place on the sea. Okay, it's a seizure of a pirate ship, for instance. They bring it into port. okay? They seize it at sea, they bring it into port, and then they put their claims on it, their proof of claim, fiduciary authority over it, okay? Now, but the thing is even though it's under those terms, even there's still a due process. The pirates have the opportunity to come in and claim the ship. Of course, they're not going to, because they're going to go to jail, so they're not going to come in and claim the ship. But they're taking control of that property without going through the person, okay, knowing that the person isn't going to show up. But they do have the opportunity. They don't even give us the opportunity to show up, you see. And at least they're giving the pirates the opportunity of due process if they want it, but they don't give it to us. But you got to understand these things and how it works and the fraud that's taken place. You had a good lesson in learning these things to understand how they constructed some of these things. But it doesn't do you any help or any good to try to battle it, trying to use the knowledge you have there. Go get the knowledge of how system works and use the system to take it back, because the system for us is still there, okay? It's just that they've ignored it, okay? So anyway, we're 10 minutes over, and we need to close down, and maybe we'll talk another time. But take a government course, learn how, and take down our free book. We have a free book there, too, 84 pages on how the court operates as far as filing papers, you know, the forms and different things. Plus, we have a whole bunch of forms, challenging jurisdiction, writing a habeas corpus, sending in information concerning a fraud on a court by the mortgage companies and the tax foreclosures
and an affidavit of facts. I just need some witnesses, honestly. That's the only thing I'm missing to go do what I got to do.
Yeah, but when you fight, you're going to win. What are you going to do after that?
I'm not going to fight. I'm going to go in there, and I'm just going to ask questions politely, and I'm not going to go in there demanding anything. I'm not going to go in there.
When you're making an argument for your case, you're fighting them, okay? And they're going to come back, and the prosecutor's going to come back. And the prosecutor is going to do, or the judge is going to do whatever the prosecutor's position is and tells him to do. He's going to do that because he's just a puppet of the prosecutor if you're in a town court, usually anyway.
Look,
and
I haven't showed up to court days, and the only way I've showed up is through paperwork. I've sent in a notice of appearance, and they still haven't issued a warrant for my arrest, and they've only been resetting my case. Like I said, I haven't showed up in flesh and blood.
Well, that's very, very dangerous. I'm telling you, I would never advise you to do that. Look, if the IRS sends you a paper, respond and do it with certified mail, and you better make clear your positions without exercising things that they can't understand. You know, you start quoting the law, you can make certain points about the law, but you start going into the Constitution and doing this and that, making an argument with the IRS, it's not going to go anywhere. But just as long as you answer and deny them, that's the key. Same thing in a court. Go in there and deny them if you want. Deny them jurisdiction. Tell them you're there by special appearance to test the jurisdiction of the court. You don't believe the court has it? I challenged it. Did you get my paper, Judge?
But they don't even have a stenographer in this court, so I know it's not a valid court. I mean, there's no point in going in there and trying to make those arguments if it's not going to be on the record.
No, it's an Supreme Court, but they look at, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. Okay, they got the guns. They'll come out and get you. You think they're not going to? At some point, they're going to say it's time to teach this guy a lesson. I'm telling you, you better be careful.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I know they've been harassing me. I know they've been coming to my door knocking, but they haven't done anything. Like I said,
At some point, they're going to be fed up with you. It doesn't mean that they're right, but they think they're right, and at some point, that they're going to act in. Look, it's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. I'm telling you right now, they're going to come out with the guns one day, so to speak. I don't mean literally with the guns, but they're going to come, and they're going to bring you into court. And they may hold you in the county jail for a while and bring you into the court so that you're going to answer. You know, these courts can be very dangerous. You know, again, respond, answer, but just make the real battle. Anyway, I got to go. We could talk another time.
I'm not completely ignoring them. I mean, like I said, they sent appearance notice, and I sent them a notice of an appearance with all my facts on there. Without that, I mean,
well,
I'm just
send your paper. But what Well, you sent your papers to make an argument that needs to be debated now instead of shutting them down by challenging jurisdiction and showing up on the day they called you into court to let them know that you challenged jurisdiction and that you're there by special appearance. Special appearance means you're not giving them jurisdiction. But again, if you want to, I would never send the paperwork in and not go to the date that they tell me to come because I know what they're going to do. So I would never do that. And I know you're being taught that. People all over the internet teaching these things that are very dangerous. People are going to jail over them. And,
nobody teach me this. This is firsthand experience, what I've been going through, honestly. I haven't been.
All right. Well, maybe you're kind of working it out with other people who have been through the system and learned. I don't know. But these are things that I see all the time, and it's, you know, it's very dangerous. If you don't mind spending a little time in jail, that's fine. You know, I don't know, what's this guy's name?
Time,
you think?
Yeah.
Huh?
I've done plenty of time.
All right, well, anyway, it's 12:15, time to close down. We could talk another time. We'll be back next Monday, okay?
All right, thank you, sir. Have a blessed one.
All right, thank you. All right, good night, everybody. We went over 15, 16 minutes, but in any event, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, everybody needs to get involved and sign up to get some papers out for us. And take the consent of government course, get educated. It's your duty to do that. And your duty to teach your children. Get your children online learning this stuff, too. They're not being taught it in school. Good night, everybody. Thanks.